Hey everybody, it's Cynic here. We had a serious problem this week. We actually lost an entire audio stream. However, luckily everything was left relatively intact in our Skype recording backup, so this episode won't be up to our usual audio standards, but I've done what I could with it. In short, you'll be hearing some added background noise, and I didn't get a chance to remove the crosstalk some of you have been complaining about, but I will give that a shot next week. So if you're still with us, strap yourselves in for what is, in my opinion, one of the best shows we've done. Welcome to the Linking Cast. This is the Giant Bomb Community's Guild Wars 2 podcast for the week of July 7th. I'm your host, Suckerfest Cynic, and joining me today is Durin.
Hello.
Noobarama.
I'm doing very well. How are you doing, Cynic?
I'm doing fine. As returning guest, Zumi Ramen.
Sup.
And finally, new to the show, the one and only, the Force of Nature, Mage Knight.
Hello. Good to be here.
We have a real magician in our podcast. This is insane. When we're united,
he's not a real knight.
Sir, he's a knight. Why would he lie? His name is Mage Knight.
Yeah.
Level 2 about level 11 is a mage, and then about the most class of knight, you know, as usual.
Wait, are we talking about D&D?
You know, the North Americans are taking over this podcast.
I thought this was a D&D cast. Yeah, California represent. West Coast, best coast.
The British are playing it sneaky.
Yeah, this is a North America. This is like two people from America, and the rest of us are Commonwealth, as usual.
Commonwealth.
That's why I said North American. We got...
Oh,
two
Americans,
okay.
Canadian. We have three. Yeah,
so
three
counts for like half an American.
I'd rather say Canada, and you guys are Southern Canadian, right?
we'd rather say Northern America. So,
see, they're being pretty, you know, political about it. They're letting you have your geographic situation without calling you American.
We're allowing you to be. We're allowing
North
you to
America
be, you know, kind
is
of folded
is
into us.
Canadian land. Okay, don't even joke.
You're all the same to me.
Zumi Ramen, how are you being doing this week?
I've just been setting up my own borders in terms of America and Canada on A to Z maps.
We've
ceded America to the Canadians. I'm mixing
you're
it up.
Yes, you're mixing
I'm fine. I'm good. So I'm all right.
What have you been playing this week?
Secret World.
Oh, wow.
That's it.
Durin's also been playing Secret World, have you?
Oh, yeah.
Did you guys both play the beta?
Yeah, of course.
I played 2 hours of it and hated it.
Really?
Oh, I played 5 minutes and then I uninstalled that shit.
I'm somewhat similar. I didn't play 2 hours and hated it, but every time I loaded it up, it just felt like a chore playing it. I just never really gave it a chance.
Yeah, it didn't feel fun.
Yeah, and then like for me, I canceled my pre-order the day before Head Start started, but they went ahead and sent me Head Start anyway. And so
they're
going to
find you out, man. They're
going to
find you out.
I've already taken care of it. I've already bought the game since then. But that gave me a chance to play it, you know, at release, you know, no commitment whatsoever. And that's where I finally kind of discovered that, hey, this is actually a pretty decent game.
Yeah, because I really like it.
Oh, it's like a fairy
initially,
tale story.
I was like, yeah, it is. Because initially I was like,
well, fairy tale story until Guild Wars 2 comes out, and then I'm going to dump this shit.
Wow, Jesus!
I'm going to balance.
I don't know.
Are you at least going to pay the child support for your character and keep on paying that subscription?
I do have a lot of adopted children in RuneScape to.
God.
Well, but that means you have a membership, don't you, on RuneScape?
I have several memberships. Each one of my characters has a membership.
What? Do you
mean? It's a pay to play game.
I would remind you this is being recorded. So are you sure you wouldn't incriminate yourself?
Yeah, my wife thinks I'm out of the country, so
okay.
As long as she doesn't hear it, I'll be fine for not paying the kids, the RuneScape kids.
But yesterday. But like, Secret World is like the mistress who you spend way more money on and doesn't really quite give you the loving you need. I'd say.
She gives me all the loving I want. I think you're fine.
Oh, God.
But
it doesn't give me the loving I deserve, but it gives me the loving that I need.
Okay, right. So, wait, do you guys
it's
think
the
you'll
Batman
be...
Batman of the mistress world. And it's the mistress of the MMO world.
Do you guys think you'll
be MMO? You know, actually, funny enough, world. I think it will be for a lot of people.
There's so many layers to that one there. That just kept on going.
I think Secret World will kind of be that for a lot of people. Like, it'll be the kind of the MMO that people play that they don't really tell people they play.
Right.
Yeah, it'll be the dead that was, like, really terrible Korean MMOs.
Like, everyone will just assume that it's dead because nobody will actually talk about the fact that they're playing it. In actuality, it has solid numbers.
Yeah. So like a Dragons Online or Lotro or something along those lines. Like a
it's basically like everybody that still plays Star Wars right now.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I guess... No, the Star Wars audience is split. There's one side that you're right. They just hide in hovels and sort of don't admit that they play the game. And then there's the other thing that's like
they're the holdouts that when the character
wait guys, I thought Star Wars Galaxies closed down.
No, I have this pirate server.
It's about the Star Wars holiday special that people enjoy.
Yes, the holiday special MMO. It's my favorite.
God damn it. Yeah, you're right.
God damn it.
Yeah, it's
what, so you guys think you'll be keeping the subs after Guild Wars 2 comes out?
You think Secret World is going to go free to play? Not for open.
No, I mean,
are you going to pay your child support? Or are you going to let your mistress and child live out on the streets and die?
it'll go free to play, but it's not going to do so. It definitely won't do so before Guild Wars 2 comes out.
Become a prostitute,
but for me currently, like I have the annual pass for WoW, so I have to pay for that until
it's
like October, November. Yeah, I mostly did it for Diablo 3 and for access to Mists of Pandaria. I was really interested to see what they were doing with that game. And then upon getting access to Mists of Pandaria, I played it for all of a week and realized, oh, they're still making it WoW.
Right,
and so I probably should have just bought Diablo 3 instead of doing it this way. But so once that ends, then yeah, I probably will continue my subscription for the Secret World at least for this foreseeable future while I play Guild Wars 2.
I'm probably gonna cut my Star Wars subscription around the time Guild Wars 2 comes out. I mean, like I'm probably
oh,
like
you're the one subscribed.
Wait, I thought you were on
oh
Tyler
no, it's out. It's on the what? Open now. Yeah, I still subscribe to. I'm the single subscriber to Star Wars. I'm their one life.
I'll talk about Star Wars.
But I'm
we're talking about galaxies. What?
Oh,
yeah.
Oh
I
shit!
I swear there's still three people that think that game's
Knights
still
of the
going.
Old Republic's a single player game.
I've been outed. But yeah, I'm part of Giant Bomb's guild there.
Are you
so
talking
like...
about Star Wars Force Unleashed 2?
Yes. Yes, that's the one.
Is Giant Bomb's guild actually like
we're?
I'd heard the numbers had dropped. Pretty
yeah,
heavily.
So we're down to about our core rating group of about 8 people. I mean, there's a few like
wait,
hangers
oh,
on.
God.
8.
So we're for all intents and purposes a rating guild, even though we don't like say we are. So yeah,
did you guys even bother to transfer when they did the character
transfer? Yeah, we transferred to a more populated server, and that's been nice. Okay. But we're basically decided as a guild when we want to stop, and that moment seems to be coming sooner rather than later. So,
what
do you guys like? 300 coming come release?
Well, yeah, in December, obviously we had like 300 members because we hit the guild cap of 500 several times.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you're single digits
really
now.
I can't believe that.
Oh
game.
No, was it 500 or 200? I think it was 200.
That's the thing though, Seneca, is the problem with that game is that like the content they released at launch was. A lot of MMOs kind of take a lot of flack for not having enough content at launch, and Star Wars was kind of there, but the issue was more so that the content was just, not only was there not a lot, but it was all incredibly easy. And so
within
like weeks of the game being released, like everyone had seen it all.
Well, yeah, I mean, the content they had was entirely leveling content for each of the classes.
Yeah, expected people to be spellbound by, oh my god, I can speak to dudes, and
yeah,
then
they
when they realized that. And initially, for 10 levels, people were like, oh my god, I can speak to dudes. Yeah. But then after them 10 levels, people were like...
Space bar.
God, I have to speak to dudes.
And now, now what they're doing is...
Hit puberty, their voice had broken.
Well, see, that's the thing, though. Like, I actually like went through my entire story, didn't space bar through anything, and I was playing the Consular, which has the worst story in the game.
I aged about 5 years trying to do that. Just like trying to watch everything.
But like, I still for the most part had a lot of fun. But it was once I hit max level and realized like that was it. There were a few flashpoints I could do. There was like I think maybe one raid I could have done if I really wanted to.
Yeah.
But I was mostly interested in PvP, and their PvP was just fucked with how the system was and the random number generator of trying to get gear. And so all of that kind of combined with not having kind of core functionality like a dungeon finder tool.
Oh yeah, I totally forgot about the RNG PvP gear. That was really fucked up.
Yeah, Yeah. At that point, there was nothing there.
Ironically, they fixed every single one of those things I mentioned. They have three raids now, which are all pretty good. They have Dungeon Finder. They have like ranked PvP and all that stuff.
It's too late.
Yeah. They should have that stuff in December, not now.
They kind of had the same issue Age of Conan did.
Yeah.
They made some great changes to it, but way too late.
That stuff is forgivable when the game is sort of diversive enough from World of Warcraft where you go, why am I not playing? That's for me, because a lot of that stuff is missing from the Secret World. There's like, there's no dungeon finder. I don't think there's ranked PvP. Yeah. But at the same time, because of the story, because of the atmosphere, because, you know, the skill system's quite unique, you're like, all right, I can't get this from any other MMO, so I'm willing to persevere.
So that's kind of what I was asking before. Like, are you guys planning to stick with the subscription with Secret World after Guild Wars 2 comes out?
I've always felt that I could balance one or the other, and for 6 months before it came out, I was like, oh man, The Old Republic, I'm going to be playing that game for at least 400 years. Mm-hmm. And like 3 months later, I was like, oh my god, I wasted 3 months on this game.
I didn't feel like I wasted 3 months, but I felt like it was the right time to stop because there just wasn't anything further for me. I really enjoyed the time I spent with that game, and that's why anytime somebody like, and even I'll kind of crack wise about the game. But honestly, like, it really is like what is there is solid. There are a lot of technical issues, and there are a lot of core mechanics that should have been there at launch that maybe some of them are there now, but some still really kind of need to be, like, add-on support.
But in the end, the story is enough to keep you guys in there, right?
You can only do that story so many times. Like, even though the story quests are the same or different for every class, the filler quests are all the same for both factions. Yeah.
The thing is, I think for people as well, like, one of the big things of MMOs is like loot lust. It's this drive to get your character to be the best looking. Mm-hmm. Whereas BioWare seem to approach it as you're going to have 8 games in one, but a big majority of MMO players don't give a shit about like leveling, having loads of different characters. Like maybe a few years on they do, but initially they get a character to max level and then they just want him to be the best that he can.
Yeah.
Like it's not all about having so many different stories.
Well, I totally people. Leveled like 4 characters to 50. Yeah, I think it was 4.
You made it about 1.5.
I think I was working on a 5th until I kind of got tired with it. But yeah,
And that's the problem with that game is that's all there is to do.
Yeah,
it's just
the money they had as well. They should have had some of that stuff in at the start, like Funcom's kind of forgivable because they don't have.
Yeah, like I'm not really sure why they would ship it.
Well, they kind of have EA, sorry, but not in a way that BioWare had EA. They didn't have like hundreds of millions, but it was like
exactly.
Why didn't you have an LFG tool at the start?
It was their first attempt at an MMO. I mean, they had some Mythic guys on board, but I think they were just like consulting, if anything, or doing like post-launch content or whatever they were doing.
They had some ideas for like why they didn't want to do a dungeon tool.
They wanted people to socialize. General chat was socializing.
But then the instant soft was half of that game.
That's the thing. They were trying to kind of address an issue that existed in WoW once the Dungeon Fighter tool came out, and that was that it really kind of made the world feel so much smaller and discouraged people from going out in the world.
What do you guys think of there being no Dungeon Fighter tool, at least at the moment, in Guild Wars 2?
It's not a good thing. I mean, it's probably...
In concept, the Dungeon Finder is a phenomenal tool. Like, it really is great. It's just, for me, you have to keep it realm-only. It can never be, because that's where the problems came in, I think, with Dungeon Finder. When it was realm only, you could make these bonds, but as soon as it went every realm, people were just like, why the fuck do I give a shit?
Having people with different languages? What would that really entail?
I'm sure it'd be like language based. I don't know how WoW works.
It would be language locked at least.
Yeah.
Because you're not playing with Asian players.
Well, realms in Guild Wars 2 work a little bit differently than Warcraft, don't they?
Yes, definitely.
Remember correctly? You have the home realm, but then you can move around. Yes. So that wouldn't be as big a deal.
Because Guild Wars 2, like the end game, inverted commas, is generally PvE, repeating past PvE, and then you have dungeons. And the dungeons are pretty much the only place where I'd think a dungeon fighter would be particularly useful.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's only, eight of them?
Oh, and Guild Wars 2, I mean, like for the dungeons, because like in Guild Wars 2, like you sort of organically group the people as you do these like area quests.
Yeah.
So like... And for that stuff, that's not really necessary to have a dungeon fighter. Whereas for Star Wars has these more like, instance flashpoints where you're taking four specific people through a know,
an standard,
area. Like a dungeon.
Right.
Yeah. Wait, were you guys playing Star Wars this week? I'm so confused right now. Like I thought Galaxy shut down, but now you're talking about galaxies. And I'm like, why are you talking about galaxies?
So Noobarama.
I downloaded the homebrew pre-combat update Star Wars Galaxy server, and that's what I've been playing.
Right. Oh yeah, yeah. Oh man, you should get me into that. I want to try that.
So Noobarama.
The thing about Galaxy 2,
though, it's out, isn't it?
Let's cut it out the there, and let's move on. Do Noobarama, what have you been doing this week so we can move on to the news?
I've been doing so much interesting stuff that if there was a medal for doing interesting stuff, I wouldn't get the medal because my week was so terrible. I played Skyrim.
Okay.
And then I opened up. So, okay, this is a short story. So what Bethesda
is that
games.
Star Wars? Is that...
No, it's like a game with dragons.
It's like Star Wars, but with dragons.
Okay.
Skyrim. Okay. So basically, Bethesda games, they give you a console, right? And you can type stuff in the console. Mm-hmm. And basically what happens is I play Skyrim, and then I type stuff in the console, and I become invincible. I play for 20 minutes, and then I get bored, and I uninstall the game.
See, there's the problem. You're playing Skyrim on the console.
This is a cycle of hate that happens like every couple of months when I feel like playing Skyrim. And then I open up the console and cheat.
Why invincible? Like, why not? Like, infinite weight, sure. Like, boosting some stats,
you
sure.
You do that, right? You do that?
No.
And then you
I don't, because I don't have either.
The gateway code.
Okay, fine. You're better than me. Okay, fine.
Yeah, like, the problem is that when you go down that rabbit hole, like, you say, like, oh, I'll just make infinite weight. But that's just, it's a gateway code to just,
dude,
once
God
you
code.
Have that power, you just...
Why not have 100
health have it all.
If I have power, I'll abuse that power.
Why don't I play a better game than Skyrim?
Shut up. No way. This is my podcast. I don't like shit like that in here.
Like Oblivion.
Skyrim was absolutely amazing. Anyway, we can move on there. Thank you for that story, Noob. I cannot believe that you ruined Skyrim for yourself. But anyway...
Red Alert 3.
Just read out the news. We only have one news topic this week. It's from a interview with Guild Wars 2 Hub. Moving around, we want to do this the pleasure.
What have you been doing, Cynic?
Oh, for me? I'll just make it a short...
Oh, I don't care. I'll read the news.
Okay, topic. Thank you.
Okay. In Guild Wars 2 news this week, John Peters discusses with Guild Wars 2 Hub what he'll be working on for the lead up to release.
I'm sure this is racist.
Pet and artificial intelligence fixes. A final tweak class rebalances with
also
some
racist.
The engineer and it's being done to eliminate the more extremely specialized builds that one can make come release. You know what?
Racist
I could have had
cast.
Until you made that remark. You ruined the this
all
entire
right.
podcast.
So to those of us who didn't catch that all from Noobarama's reading there, I don't know how you could have missed that, to be honest. But essentially, John Peters had an interview with Guild Wars 2 Hub, and he explained what he's going to be doing between now and release. There's only 2 months left, so essentially his job over there is systems designer or systems lead. So what that means is combat systems, character balance, that kind of stuff. And what you'll find, his main touches are, it's like, you know, that big change or big nerf to that wonderful build you loved in Guild Wars 1. He was the guy who generally did that. So you want
Ghostcrawler.
So he was the dick that I always wanted to punch in the face every time my build stopped working.
He's the guy who, when you got that really good scythe for your warrior dervish, I think it was, and he nerfed the dervish.
And then it's irrelevant. Yeah, and then it's irrelevant. Right. I know that feeling.
I'm pretty sure he's the guy. I'm pretty sure he's been with the unit for a while. Anyway, let's not talk about things we weren't particularly informed about. What we can talk about is Guild Wars 2.
That's what we do on this podcast.
Yeah,
so.
well, we do, but we try not to. So what do you
I'll
into?
Fact check it.
The fact checking kills podcasts. Hey, call it detested. So what, the first one, this we can split this out into three main things, I think, from this article. And the first one is probably perhaps the most interesting to me is pet AI. So essentially, what he said here is that Noob, can you see the show notes? Can you line 14 there? Can you read out that?
Yeah, I can.
Just do it in whatever voice. Don't do it in the
line 14. We have tackled a few bugs on the AI side, but we haven't tackled it full on yet. This is a matter of resource management.
Right.
The programmers who handle this stuff also work on critical systems, such as performance. The short answer is that pets need to be 100% responsive in combat, always attacking when they can and obeying any commands you give them. That has to happen in order for us to release the game.
Which is pretty strong language, and I love the idea of this. So essentially, just saying straight up, like pets are pretty much broken as they are, and they really need to get done but released. I believe the thing he most stresses here is also what I believe is the most important. They have to be 100% responsive, and thankfully, we finally have someone on the show who played Ranger Mage Knight.
Oh, I was about to ask if you guys played pet classes during the beta. Well, I did, and I found the pets to be just fine. Like I didn't
really
My little bear, he did what I wanted him to, which was just he attacked what I attacked, and he didn't aggro anything.
Did you avoid fighting the entire game?
No, I fought like as many mobs as I could find, because experience was kind of hard to come by.
Man, where did you find those mobs?
I know, right?
In the town? Were you trying to fight inside Holbrook?
But yeah, I think I didn't find any problems with the AI. I mean, I didn't really... like stress test the pit AI. I didn't put him in any stress situations. I don't think I even marked any targets. It just sort of.
But did you push in the way of PvP, or was it just
mainly? I played like one round of PvP. I think with Ranger, right. And also fine. Like yeah.
Well, I'll run this by you because I think if you troll through the forums, the two biggest things when it comes to pets that people talk about is one, the AI. I think a lot of the criticism here, and Tarkin is the big proponent of this, even though he's not on the show today. He played Ranger for about 6 to 10 levels, and he felt that a major fix that pets kind of needed was a lot of the melee pets, for example, pretty much anything but spiders from memory. Most of the melee pets tend to not dodge or move out of the way of like major attacks, for example, from bosses.
They try to be tanks.
Maybe some dodge AI would be nice if they could figure that out.
Exactly, and that was one of his major things, and also generally on the forums you see a lot of people saying that peps tend to just straight up just die too frequently. I think...
Yeah, so durability is definitely the biggest problem. I mean, like, in any major fight, my pet would go down pretty quickly, and especially since it changes, you can't just swap pets and bring them back to life that way.
What?
That
they changed it?
I'm pretty sure they changed it.
That I don't know. Can we confirm? Because I from memory, that was pretty much the only balancing factor. I'm pretty sure that's still.
I remember them saying somewhere that like it used to be you could swap your pet out, and then while your pet was swapped, you would like slowly come back to life.
Yeah.
Yeah. I believe they took that out.
Oh, I don't want to. Because if we go down that road, I can complain for a solid 5 minutes. let's assume that we're wrong in this point and they left that in.
Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Maybe I must have misread something.
Do we know if the pet AI and the minion AI is
the
identical?
It's the same.
It is? Okay, because I noticed a lot of issues. Because I actually did a minion necromancer build where I had like as many minions as I could. And... yeah, the AI for them was fucking terrible. Like it tried to.
Minions have an excuse for being dumb. Pets don't.
Because like, minions are kind of are throwaway. You can resummon as many as you want. But
that's the thing though, is that the way they handle the cooldowns on them though, like once it dies, that's when it triggers the cooldown.
Okay.
So you are completely out that minion until the cooldown is up.
Oh, interesting. Wow. I didn't actually know.
Yeah, well, and the Rangers even more dire, because the Rangers, it's basically once per fight. Like, if once your guy dies, you can either revive him, which would be tough in a solo fight especially, mm-hmm. or you wait for the fight to be over so you can revive him.
Wait,
so,
do they do the same thing like they did in the original Guild Wars, where if once your pet dies, all of your skills go on cooldown?
No,
oh, thank God.
No.
That would suck quite a bit in Guild Wars 2.
Yeah, that would be bad.
Honestly, when I see news like this, I'm A, thankful, because I believe that they know what the problem is and they're going to try their damnedest to fix it, but I'm also very skeptical that it will actually get done. Like, not that they won't try, and not that it won't make some fixes, but honestly, if you look at pets from the original Guild Wars, they said for the solid, 7 years that game was out, and it's still out today, that they'd be fixing pet AI, and obviously they moved on to development in Guild Wars 2, but that shit was never fixed.
Well, that's not even confined to Guild Wars. AI. Like, that's an issue in, pretty much any MMO. Like, when it comes to, pet classes, like, the pet UI really gets put on the back burner for development time.
Yeah,
and they just kind of tend to, whatever, we'll just... we'll get to that eventually, but for the meantime, here's an easy fix for it.
If I want something to be broken, I might as well be something like pet AI. Like, to be honest, it's not it's important that people who play pet classes, but it's not mission critical.
I actually think it is mission critical because
to some extent it's not. But well, like, as long as it's, anybody it, who wants like the to play
AI,
Ranger, like
the pet AI works, it's not like completely broken, but it's just that it has a few things, a few like specific situations where it gets kind of messed up.
What would you say the they were? Is, like, if you had to pick the top couple of things you would like to see fixed in pet AI, what would you say?
Oh. I mean, like I said, I didn't really see problems with it. You'd have to ask someone who was complaining on the forums.
Right, there you go.
I think durability is probably the biggest.
Yeah, durability. Problem. I mean, that's not really a pet AI or a bug. That's just a balance thing.
Well, it could be like, part of element pet AI. For example, like Tarkin's suggestion of having them have dodge AI, for example,
dodge AI
would be fantastic.
Is there a skill that lets you revive your pet without being beside them?
There quite possibly could be.
So Rangers have, because I've actually been investigating Ranger, because after playing Rifle Warrior for two beaters in a row and falling in absolute love with it, I want to see if the Longbow Ranger has anything on it. I know it has more damage, but I want to see how the survivability is. Anyway, for those who aren't theory crafters, so the major thing
everyone?
Is when a ranger goes down, I think skill one is to res your pet, and then skill four or five is for the pet to res you.
This is the pet to res you.
Yeah.
Really
pets
nice.
Can res you? What?
Yes, your pet can res you, which is
that's
amazing.
If they can't dodge tax, I don't think they'd be smart enough
that's why you
to res you.
That's why you pick the beefy pets like bears. They just sit there and like get you up while you take damage.
Exactly. And beyond that, like, you res pets as if you res another player. So you just go up to mid-def.
And bites you back to life.
There's so many times where I've accidentally like res pets instead of people in like a pile of bodies. That
sucks. It's annoying.
Most
but
of the time... Right. Most of the time, I'm not even trying to revive people. I just want to pick up stuff. Like, I don't care.
Well, that's you. I try to revive anyone I find.
Yeah,
I mean, I feel like...
You get XP for reviving other people, don't you? You get a bonus for reviving other players.
Yeah.
That doesn't... You can't sell XP in the trading post. I mean, I feel like they'll like improve the pet system, but I don't think they'll ever quote unquote fix it.
Yeah, I don't think they'll overhaul it.
They can, they'll you know make it better, but there'll be always people complaining, and it could always be better.
Something they will be overhauling though is the engineer. How's that for a segue?
Oh, claps on the segue.
Oh, don't trust the segue. No, you've ruined it.
Nubarama, if you want to read us through that next quote, it's pretty long.
Changes have been made to many skills and trait lines as well. The previous lists of... Okay, this is for engineers, by the way. Yeah. The previous list of traits contained many holdovers from the old trait system that did not fit into the new tier paradigm.
Paradigm.
That's
serious?
How you spell paradigm.
What are you, like 10?
I'm sorry, I don't remember how to spell paradigm. Changes have been made to many skills and the trait lines as well. The previous list of traits contained many holdovers... That's the goddamn same quote. What's wrong with you? What?
Every single one.
Yeah, that's it.
Is the next that's part. In case you've
copied pasted the same.
Oh right, you guys. Okay, so every single one of the kits have been updated and improved in the last few days. We'll gather about feedback on those improvements for the next BVLU and continue to work from there. I'll give you an example because of feeling generous was his next statement. So essentially just to touch on the first part, the trait tiers is the new system where you no longer have every trait to activate to choose from when investing in trait lines. If you do not know what any of that means, you should check out the wiki. Because it'll give you a way better explanation than what I can do over here. But essentially, because of that, the new balancing allows them to have more powerful traits towards the end of the trait line. So before, when they had traits like, for example, plus 5% weapon damage, which is honestly pretty useless in my opinion, when it's all about opportunity cost, let's not go into it. But anyway, they're going to take out some of the more useless traits and replace them with more useful ones. And engineer is one of the ones which were most affected by the switch from the old trait system to the new one. So definitely they'll be seeing some rebalancing there. But to move on to the next half of it, he has an example. So the mine kit is no longer a kit. It's a single mine that works the elements that the kit did, but now you detonate that mine. It knocks enemies back and removes boons. And he goes on to explain a little bit more about it, but essentially the mind kit is now just a skill, for example. It's just one of the changes they're going to be making. So there's going to be one of your utility skills. You're going to put in a utility skill slot. Then in the toolbar, the tool belt, and if you don't know how engineers work, again, the wiki is probably the best place to go. You can activate the mine's detonation. So you throw the mine down and then you can detonate it. So it's kind of like a ranger trap in many ways. And I think it's a really great dynamic to add to the engineer build. Has anyone here played engineer?
Not yet.
I've played seen an engineer bit. Running I'm, around I'm, in towns.
I'm gonna main a engineer retail.
I think I will, but I'm gonna check it out next.
I think I fought beside an engineer before.
That counts.
So real experts here. Counts. Real experts.
I can confirm they exist in the game, but
they can put down these turrets that like don't do much because I ended up dooming most of the fighting.
Oh Jesus!
So if be better if you're an engineer.
So go somewhere else if you're a fan of engineering and don't want to hear people who don't know what they're talking about engineer. Is that what you're saying?
Or just come back, you know, after the next baseball weekend because I'm sure
definitely we'll talk about it. But in general, like I'm just. Aside from the actual in-depth cost mechanics here, this is an example of a change they're making to the engineer, which I really hope to see in other classes. For example, they've already confirmed, and I think it was John himself who did so, that the longbow for warriors is going to be entirely overhauled. How do you guys feel about them making changes as sweeping as this is this close to release? Durin?
I think it's awesome.
Good.
Oh,
yeah, it's great.
Awesome. I'm happy that everyone has an idea. Mage Knight, if you can elaborate, what do you feel?
I think it's good that they're, you know, willing to sweep aside an entire like item concept right before retail. I think that flexibility is a strong thing to have.
Yeah,
to be able to respond to people's concerns with certain classes and make it so it's maximizing the fun.
Absolutely. Zoom Ramen, do you have something to say?
It just shows a good side of them. It's like ostensibly, even though it's 2 months away, like which isn't that long, this game is still in beta. Like this game is still in closed beta, this game can still evolve, and an MMO is always going to evolve, and to be making changes like this so close shows that, you know, they're willing to, you know, make some tough calls and be like, no, this needs to change and this needs to be different, because they could quite easily be like, oh, we'll do it in a couple of months, we'll just get it out of the way, because we're all tired. We've been working on this game for a while.
Well, yeah, I absolutely love the fact
to put it mildly.
Yeah.
So especially the two ones he called out, like some of the toolkits for the engineer and definitely the pet AI for rangers are things that I felt were really not necessarily terrible for the game, but you want a game where everyone chooses classes not because they're OP or underpowered, but because they're just the playstyle fits them. So having classes like the engineer, which did have some significant deficiencies, I think, as I was saying earlier, like the number one thing I see in the forums is complaints about the pets. The number two I see is just like overall complaints about the power of the engineer, to be honest. And I'd love the idea of the class. I can't wait to see what the changes are to both that and the longbow for the warrior in the next beta weekend, but we'll talk about that next week. But yeah, in general, I find that absolutely amazing. Durin, do you have any thoughts on this?
I feel like if this was a pay-to-play MMO, making big sweeping changes like this leading up to the release could be a little bit worrying.
Really?
Just because of the investment the player has to make in a game like that.
Oh, right.
Where, you know, something this big, like, you know, could show that the developer clearly isn't ready for launch, and so, like, not only am I paying boxed for a, you know, what a player might see as an unfinished game, but you're then essentially paying monthly to beta test a game as they're making these large sweeping changes once it's been released. But with the model they're going with this game, it's really no different than, you know, some of the big sweeping changes that happened in Diablo 3 leading up to its release. And I mean, they're big changes, but they're big changes that need to be made, and the game it has to come out at some point. They can't rely on subscription numbers to help with the development time. The game needs to come out. So, it's definitely not a bad thing.
I guess.
Go on.
No, it's just fine. Go.
Well, I'm saying, it just has to come out. It's right. And we were starting to see people, like I go on Reddit a lot. Don't know if you guys do, but, you know, in the Guild Wars 2 subreddit, there were a lot of people going, like, is anyone starting to lose hype about this game? Like, is it taking too long? So, you know, this game, like, you're right, it has to come out now, or it has to come out soon, and, you know, making these changes is I think it's a good sign for where they're going with Guild Wars 2.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everything, all the core stuff there is clearly done. It is very, very much ready for a release. There are just class tweaks that are going to have to happen and are going to continue to happen as the game goes forward. So with having a good, playable, solid, stable game, like, there's no reason for it not to go ahead and come out and for them to put off these big changes until after release. Like, there's no reason they need to do that.
Yeah, they don't turn it into a kart racer or anything. They're not announced like it's not like a first-person shooter or anything. It's just... it's kind of mildly big changes. Like, you know, yeah, it's not massive, but it's enough that people will care about them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big change for anybody who is currently interested in the engineering class, but from an overall perspective of the game, it's not like they're going through and just suddenly deciding, we're going to rehaul combat, and it's going to be like Terra now.
Oh, God. Yeah, as long as
oh, can I have my little girls?
Oh, God. All right, so moving on. I think I fixed the show notes for you.
Racist Nibirama. And pedophilic. This is...
Well, I'm not racist.
Line 24. That
British accent.
It's called child enthusiasm. I'm sorry. Already. I've gone too far out of bounds. Okay.
Far too far.
Child
build
enthusiasm.
Limitations. This person, whoever the person who quoted this, said, "We are still working out what the upper and lower limits for builds need to be. By the next beta weekend, you will see a lot of balance changes to all professions as we work towards establishing these limits. There are still going to be builds that fall into the glass cannon category, support category, etc. We just need to determine where to draw the line."
Yeah, so what that's referring to is, again, it's someone in the same John Peters interview. So it's John Peters saying it, and what he's going into here is a comment in that, for example, you can make a ranger with about 12,000 health at the moment who does about 12,000 damage with a volley. You can do some nuts things with the current building system. And then you're having elements where you can have a warrior out there who just heals everyone with shouts, is unkillable, but at the same time does very little damage. Or you can have someone who, in this case, does a huge amount of damage but dies in two hits from pretty much anything. Like, if a Viserate warrior just looks at them funny, they kind of explode into a shower of gibs. Like, you can have that with the current build system. And though that's fun to some extent, they do want to limit those possibilities. He didn't even go to how they're planning to limit it. I assume it's going to be something along the lines of gear, for example, or just the base stats for the class, for example. When every class
going to take away traits.
But no, like when every class hits level 80, they have different levels of base stats. For example, a guardian at level 80 has a different minimum health level than a warrior does. And I assume there's going to be adjusting stuff like that. But Nibirama, I think you have something to say on this point. How do you feel about them limiting the builds that people can do here?
They're making stupid decision because they're stupid. They know nothing about Guild Wars. They're stupid. I like the idea of having, like, even if I make terrible choices and ruin my character forever, I think that's a consequence, and that includes the fun of building out your character the way you want to. And what if that means having a one hit dead glass cannon that also kills in one hit? That's okay.
I think it's good.
If it's not game breaking, it shouldn't be game breaking. It's just making sure people don't f up their characters.
I think they're looking at the game breaking things. I think they're trying to curb the highs and the lows. They want to make sure people are having fun, and it's not fun to be gibbed instantly by a ranger from 1500 units away. It's not fun to be, a 300,000 HP tank. They want to make sure it's fun for everyone. So that means
This is a real similar issue to that Diablo 3 ran into when people started hitting Inferno, and suddenly Demon Hunters were pulling ahead of everybody else because they could do these builds that would have them going into Inferno with like 10,000 health, but being able to just one-shot everything. So as long as they don't get hit, they can just progress through and finish the game, whereas everybody else is struggling still back in Act 1 Inferno and not having fun. Like, yeah, it was fun for the Demon Hunters, but it wasn't fun for everybody else.
Right.
And so they had to pull that class back.
Why aren't you playing Demon Hunter?
I think if someone masters the system and someone like understands what works well and what does it, like, the reward is that they're a super powerful guy. Now, obviously, on the flip side, they release that on the internet and everyone's super powerful guy. But
yeah, that's a very good point. You can't have a secret build because everything is immediately uploaded to YouTube, and like the fun little things that you could have in older games, for example, like an old ass RPG, you can build some interesting stuff and have complete freedom over it because A, they were single player, and B, like, you wouldn't be affecting anyone else's time. Like, I agree that it's really awesome to discover one of those secret builds and really have a fantastic time of it. But and by almost not really exploiting, but really like using the build abilities to its extreme. But because, as you said, that'll immediately be like distributed to Guild Wars 2 Builder or the YouTube. You're just gonna have a lot of people. You're gonna have shifts in meta because of these builds. And I definitely see
absolutely, yeah.
What Mage Knight is talking about of in the end, it's not Anduin.
But don't you want shifts in meta? You don't want.
Yeah.
You want natural shifts in meta.
Yeah,
you want shifts in meta because of. You want to shift in meta because somebody figured some new cool tactic within the game, or you know, maybe a tweak to a build that makes it a little bit more powerful, or makes it able to deal with something maybe it couldn't previously deal with. You don't want to shift in a meta where it's like, okay, everybody who plays a Ranger is now going to use this spec if they're going to do PvP, because it's the only real viable spec, because otherwise you're just doing it wrong.
Exactly.
Like, that's not a good shift in meta.
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth.
I just hope they don't go... I think, you know, that it's they need to find a nice balance, because like, I played League of Legends, and the weird way they do it is basically, or when you boil it down, it's like as soon as a character gets popular, like they go, right, that character needs a nerf, and then they buff up someone that's not being used a lot, it seems.
Well, I think the difference there...
The way League of Legends does it is instead of like balancing everything out, they just make everything overpowered.
Well, in League of Legends, I think they have other reasons for doing those things. Because nerfing a character straight up makes them money. Because now suddenly there's another character that becomes the more powerful character.
I just mean, I don't hope they just, if they find someone find a powerful build, they don't just go, right, we're nerfing that. I hope they sort of balance it out and they sort of work with it instead of just going, well, we're just going to have to nerf it. We're just going to have to reduce the cooldown to like whatever. We're just going to have to reduce the damage. I hope they kind of, you know, they say, all right, you can have this build. It won't be as effective, but it's still going to be as viable.
Yeah, and
viable enough.
I think that's definitely their plan. I mean, when they say that they're still working on the upper and lower limits for builds where they need to
be. That's exactly what they're saying. Exactly.
They plan for there to be those upper levels and for, you know, people to be able to still find those builds, but for them just not to be completely broken builds like that.
Yeah, like the key word is broken. They just want to reduce the amount of broken builds, but keep the amount of extreme builds, let's just say. It's a hard balance, and it sounds like something almost unattainable, but yeah, that's
they
what
they can muck it up, maybe. I feel like they're going to
muck it up. In the last beta weekend, did you guys play much PvP? Because I did not. Do you guys feel like there's any classes that are like super broken right now? I mean, like, Lombo Rangers seem pretty strong, but I don't know.
I think that's really going to come out in structured PvP, because in World v. World, it's just the numbers are so big. Like, one person, no matter how overpowered they might be, just doesn't really sway the battle that much.
Yeah.
And I think everybody here has very limited...
structured.
Experience with structured. So,
yeah.
I'm a professional structured player. I got invited to the professional structured league.
Somehow, structured I think that's why.
What? Me lying?
I think that
new play PvP.
Yeah, like the only place we really see these like really huge inverted commas like extreme builds coming through is as Dune said, structured, but. It can be spread again through that whole YouTube thing, because the reason I know that, for example, you can make a really powerful Ranger, really glossy Ranger, should I say, is because of that you know, spreading of builds through the various means. Like, for example, Guild Wars 2 Guru, there's a bunch of theorycrafters on there of various levels of skill who do tend to populate build knowledge. For example, Eviscerate on the warrior side of things. And I just imagine the listeners, like a small crowd listens going, yay, Eviscerate. Anyway, Eviscerate is one of those things that kind of needs to be nerfed. It's essentially a spike by an axe warrior. All you need is a max main hand, so you can either go axe main hand, warhand, offhand to keep movability, but still have the Eviscerate option for the spike. And what it is you charge towards the enemy at incredibly fast speeds, about, what, 2 times normal movement speed, I'd say it would be, and hit them for one tick of, I think it was about 7,000 to 8,000 damage.
nice.
And you can do that really on a weapon swap. So what the people did was they combined it with a weapon sigil that is your next, when you swap to this weapon, your next attack does either 100% chance to critical or 30% more base damage. Like, there's two different sigils that people have been using with it. So they've been piling those two on top of one another. So you get people like hitting for 9,000 or so with a single Eviscerate. Shit gets real. So stuff like that is what they are planning to eliminate. And obviously stuff like that, I think someone said it really nicely in the Guild Wars 2 forums. I'm not sure who it was, but someone said, no matter what it is, I don't think there's an excuse for a build to be able to pump out about 10,000 damage in one hit like that. Like, that shit has to be. It doesn't matter what class it is. I don't care if it's warrior or not, but that shit has to be limited. And I agree. And I think they know about it. Arena definitely knows. They have experience with PvP. Guild Wars 1 was a very PvP-oriented game. And yeah, I have faith in this case that it'll get fixed, unlike Pet AI to some extent.
No.
But with that, we can move on. I think we can put a cap on that. I definitely think we can talk more next week about what we want to play next week. I definitely want to try out those Glassy Ranger builds, for example, and Eviscerate Warrior build to see if it is actually as overpowered as people say it is. But and I want to see what changes they make. But we can move on to our main topic of discussion this week, which I'm really happy about because something we haven't talked about in the Linkcast before, even though people talk
Star
about
Star Wars The Old Republic.
That's what you brought me on, right?
Wait. So Star Wars The Old Republic.
Oh, God, stop.
Wait, Knights of the Old Republic.
Moratoriums.
So what we'll be talking about this week is with the game releasing so soon, and it's been developed for about 7 years, we were wondering, what is ArenaNet going to do to actually make money off Guild Wars 2? Now, obviously...
Well, I was wondering.
They have a lot of pre-orders. And that's $60 a pop, and I think they're hitting about 3 million, I think was the number.
They said something about hundreds of thousands of pre-orders.
That's pre-purchase was hundreds of thousands. Pre-orders is sitting at quite a few more. But either way, like that's one tick of it. But beyond release, it's kind of interesting if we just have a time to talk about stuff like, you know, the Gem Store and expansions. So let's start with the first one, the Gem Store. I think the first topic for discussion today is just to explain for people out there. The Gem Store is a place in Guild Wars 2. It's linked to the Black Lion Trading Company. It was essentially the in-game trading mechanism, similar to the auction house in Diablo 3, but it has its distinct differences. And one of the main changes is you have two main, I would say, tradable pieces of currency in Guild Wars. One's in gold, and obviously the derivations, so silver and copper, and then the other one is gems. And what gems are the thing you actually can exchange real world dollars for. So you put dollars into the game, you get gems, you can then trade gems for gold or silver or whatever, and
you can also buy gems with gold.
Absolutely. Yeah. So vice versa is also possible.
But you cannot use gems to get real money. That's not possible.
Agreed. Yeah, that is correct. So essentially, the gem store is where you can go on and purchase, as you said, with gems, in-game items such as a experience boost of 1 hour or different looks for your character. For example, a cook's outfit you can get. I think Noobarama got one of those.
Yeah, I did. It cost me a gold.
Exactly. It's actually quite... Anyway, so you purchase that with the gems, and as you said earlier, stuff like extra character slots, for example. When you're working with in-game gold, the awesome thing about the system is it kind of can't be buy to win almost inbuilt, because you can pretty much earn everything off the gem store. You can earn anything off the gem store by trading in-game currency for it. So for example, you want extra character slots, you actually have the ability to trade in-game gold for gems and thus get in-game character slots, like more character slots for your account, which is, I think, is awesome. Things. So we're going to go rewind it back again and talk about the gem store in general. The first topic here is, what would you guys buy from the gem store? What would you pay ArenaNet for, starting with Noob?
With real money. With real money?
Yeah, either way. What would you pay real money for?
The thing is, I'd be really tempted to buy a lot of vanity stuff. So it wouldn't be above me to buy, to not buy... what is it called? A chef's outfit? I'd buy that with real money. What I wouldn't buy with real money would be
so
stuff.
Bizarre.
Right. I wouldn't buy stuff that would actually enhance my gameplay. Like, I wouldn't buy any of those boosters or stuff
boosters,
like that.
Exactly.
But I would buy vanity stuff. Like, I don't know why.
You would probably spend real character dollars on that.
Well, partly because the boosters are kind of bad. Like, they're not. Right. They're nothing that's going to make
you like
actually.
I wouldn't buy gold. I would only buy vanity stuff. I wouldn't buy gold.
No, really?
I wouldn't spend money on gold. No, you wouldn't. Probably not.
Well, we'll get there in a bit. So I'd definitely say, personally, I'd probably spend extra, like real money on extra character slots when I need them, assuming I want them straight out of the gate. Wait, how many characters is everyone going to make? Like, Noob, you're going to make like...
I made a list. I made myself a list of what characters I'm going to make.
Yeah, I was going to say, how many slots do you get?
My tally is at 8 right now. I figured out their names, like how they're going to look like, and their backstory.
My God. But that's a good question.
How many slots do you get?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because I believe that the general consensus is five. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you start with, yeah.
We believe it's max? Five, but we're not sure. And we're not sure what the max is, if there isn't even a max.
No, it is definitely five. I can confirm that, because whenever we were doing the live event, I had to make sure I didn't make the last character, so if we decided to do that stuff.
That's for the beta, but we're not sure what it'll be for, like, coming release.
Oh, okay, true.
Yeah. But yeah, 5 character slots is what we are assuming you'll have come release. And I personally would only really be starting with about 2 characters out of the gate, and I'll get them both to 80 before you've been considering making more. Duri, really? what do you think you'll do?
Probably something similar. Like, I'll start off with 1 or 2 characters, get them to 80, and then from there, whatever the max number of characters you can have on your account is probably what I'll have. I am an altaholic.
Zumi Ramen?
I don't know. I always get, when I get this idea of like free to play in my head, I always feel a bit grimy about spending money. I think Guild Wars 2 will be a bit different because it'll be high quality and I'll be like, yeah, I want to support this.
Yeah, that's I think that's the biggest difference, is that it is free to play, but it still feels like a proper MMO. It's not like I'm throwing money at Perfect World.
I may buy vanity stuff. Chef's outfit probably wouldn't be top of my list.
I'm trying to become the greatest chef in all of Tyria.
Yeah, so. He is. Okay. This is our cooking show.
Zumi, you're British, though, so you're going to have to get a top hat, right?
Oh, dude.
Yeah, no, I was about to say I'm always partial to a monocle and a top hat.
Yeah.
It's just always like that.
I'm not even British, and I want that. Damn.
Stop
wasting your money on useless items. Jesus.
I probably won't buy booster packs. I don't know. I feel a bit dirty buying booster packs.
They feel unnecessary.
Yeah,
in a lot of cases.
I don't know.
I seriously don't buy any vanity stuff either. Like, I like the way the armor looks anyway, so I don't really need this little town outfits. But
but the chef's outfit gives you skills where you can do actions. It's so cool.
Oh, okay, if you want to be master chef, that's definitely necessary. But, I mean, I can see myself buying utility things. Like, I can see myself buying the mystic keys to get some stuff out of the boxes. Like, that's some
trying to pay to win.
I don't know. I don't want to pay to win, but I don't know. Maybe I can see myself. I've already paid
I'm above that.
I've already paid for keys for Dota 2 chests after I said I wouldn't. Oh, so I'm not. Jesus. I don't trust myself anymore. Like, yeah. I don't know what I could do with myself.
I wanted to start.
That's too much of a gray area for me.
I could see myself buying the transmutation stones that make that or like the transmutation and Warcraft, where it takes the stats of one item and the look of another item and combines them. I could see myself doing that, maybe, if I get really attached to a set of armor.
Yeah. But I wanted to start off with something positive, so what we would buy, because we definitely have stuff to talk about with stuff they do have in the system that we probably think they kind of shouldn't. But anyway.
I will say real quickly, though, given how much, and you'll probably agree with this too, Cynic, I think, given how much World v. World I plan to do, I probably won't be adverse to buying gold.
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually a really good point.
You need gold in World v. World to actually accomplish anything, and
at least out of the game.
Because this is a free to play model and everything, like, it makes me feel a lot more okay with spending money on just getting in game gold.
That's a really good point.
If I start raiding, actually, as well, you know, if I start getting deep into that, then I'm probably, you know, buying gold for like repairs and stuff.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's
totally repairs. So you know, that's when, because when people used to buy gold in WoW, like it. A lot of people was just like, I want a really nice hat from the auction house. But some people would
your WoW player voice.
I've never heard something said like that in a British accent.
My pretend voice for everything, really.
That was like your housewife WoW player.
I love druids because they're in touch with nature. No, but
that's so sexist.
like a lot of people bought it for gold because it cost a lot to do repairs. So
yeah, so
it was and the way this game is set up, you don't feel dirty doing so because one, you're buying it from basically ArenaNet, not from some Chinese cash farmer website that hacks accounts in order to get that gold.
That's owned by the government of China.
Yeah.
God.
And two, because you're not paying monthly for the game, it frees up that mindset of like I'm not spending the subscription on this game, so it's cool if I drop $5 on loaded gold or drop $10 on some gold this month, or maybe every few months drop maybe $20 on some gold.
God, do you guys have no honor? You got to earn that stuff with hard work.
My time is worth more.
Jesus.
Kiwa Suguru has a really great list of the stuff they will be offering in the gem store, at least as they have it in BWE2. So I'm just going to run down this to see if there's anything interesting on here that you guys might want to purchase. So experience boost, I'm just going to tell for the guys who are less informed, 50-cent experience boost from kills for 1 hour. So it's not from stuff like quests, it's not, event chains and getting event rewards. It's only from kills. So Mage Knight, do you think that's even remotely worth purchasing?
I don't think so. I think for 1 hour and just from kills, like, kills from XP is definitely not non-negligible, but it's a pretty small fraction compared to quest XP.
Yeah.
Especially when you can, like, you know.
Maybe if you're farming dungeons.
Maybe if you're farming dungeons, yeah.
Maybe then. But that at the same time,
do we have any, the prices are subject to change, but how much is 125 gems in real money?
During the beta weekend, it was, in real money, I don't know, but it was around 13 to 16 silver for 100 gems.
Yes, but for real money,
more expensive.
We're assuming it'll be 100 gems to a dollar. I'm going to put that out there.
That's unreasonable.
What do you think it'll be?
That would mean the chef's outfit would cost over $5.
That's entirely possible.
That's
full outfit. Yeah, that's
very possible. Possible.
That's fair and possible. That's in line. That is in line with other games' expectations of outfits.
An entire outfit. Definitely.
That's talking like $5.
If you're talking a single piece of vanity gear, then no, that would be too high.
You're looking
at
an
entire outfit.
$60 at least. Like $60 would be reasonable for that, I think. You guys are crazy. Actually, you're right, because the outfits in Guild Wars 2 or the original Guild Wars were $10.
Yeah, exactly. So I think $100 for 100.
And I wasn't above buying that either.
but yeah, I mean, if it's only $1.25, even then, I'm not sure if I would still go for 1 hour and only monster kills.
It's weird considering the
game is not like. It actively discourages grinding off of kills.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's not the game. That's not what it's focused on. It's you're doing quests and like getting new content, progressing that way.
So a little bit further down the list here on the consumables. So the Evan Glasnevate Nash Blades Box of Fun. So have you guys played with that before?
No.
Okay, so the box.
I've seen it. Yeah.
We play within the BWE. So what the box of fun is essentially you double click on it. I think that's all you really need to do, and it does something random effect to your character. So you can go invisible, you can become a deer, you become a pig, you can be huge, you can be really tiny. There's this crazy stuff that it actually does to your character. It's more of like a little fun item you can do for in-game inverted commas parties, I guess. I don't know.
I really don't like this.
That seems kind of fun, but I don't want to pay real money for that. Yeah,
I don't.
Yeah,
exactly. I don't like paying money for that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that would be $2.50.
Really dirty.
For the nice price of $2.50, you can turn into a deer. Yeah,
no, for 5 minutes. No, thank you.
No, you can have the chance. Like, I feel like I would buy something like that with gold. Like,
yeah, with gold.
I'm like level 80, and I'm just not playing the game that much anymore in terms of like.
I mean, you can buy gems of silver and stuff, right? Like that's.
Yes, yep. So that is a very good point. I can see myself maybe, as Noob said, when I hit 80, maybe buying a couple of those. But I don't see myself paying $12.50 for it.
After you've done all the PvE content, you're filthy rich from all that quest gold. You can just like blow all your money away on party items.
Yeah,
I can see a lot of
every chef's outfit in the game.
I can see a very drunk person waking up and having 300 boxes of fun.
think about how happy that guy would be just forever. He just put boxes of fun everywhere, and just everyone would be happy.
God, you know what they're going to do? Everyone they're going to add titles. Where it's like, how many boxes of fun have you opened?
Exactly.
Don't give them ideas.
And then you're going to spend hundreds of dollars on boxes of funds to get that title.
We'll get to the
ripoffs
in a second. I have a couple on here that I want to talk about.
What about there's like a 1 in 100 chance or 1 in 1,000 chance that opening boxes of fun will give you a title?
Oh, you should just buy titles. Like, just stick to the obvious conclusion.
You get a miniature polar bear that's worth hundreds of thousands of in real life dollars, and they'll buy those like
in real life dollars.
In real life dollars, like the dollar in
fake
life
dollars. Yeah, okay,
all right.
Well, there's
so
only one currency in real
the
life.
Next item I want to talk about is bag slot expansion. So an extra bag slot for your inventory, each character up to 7 bag slots.
Getting bag slots doesn't seem, or bag slots, I guess.
Yeah.
Not bags. Bags.
Yeah, bags.
Four, like assuming we're going on the 100 points equals $1 thing, $4 seems very steep for a bag.
I'm pretty
slot.
Good at cleaning out my inventory. I don't know about you guys, but I try not to pack rat too much, and so
no,
I feel
like that's pretty cheap. Like I feel like something like that should be more expensive than a costume, but I guess that's my skewed view. I don't know, $4 for an entire bag slot. That's a bag slot. You can put stuff in there.
Yeah, I think if people go into World of Warcraft and you like go to like hardcore raiders, or you go to like collectors and you go $4 and we'll give you another shot at a bag, they'll be like, holy shit, give it here. Like I think for some people that is legitimately a great deal because of just how much crap they collect. But I personally.
Yeah, I suppose it's a permanent upgrade, so it's not like it's something you're gonna have to continue doing.
Well, it's per character.
It's not like every 30 days.
If it only lasted an hour and only worked with you for monsters.
That's what they do in Vindictus. It's ridiculous.
Oh god, let's not talk about Vindictus. But it is. I think it's. If I'm reading this correctly, it is per character. So, if, for example, you don't. If you were to have for 8 characters and you run them all through dungeons,
but that's what you stick on your farming character.
Yeah, exactly. You make your real character, and that's where you spend the money on the bag slots.
And here's a slot. So if you put a box in there, for example, I think boxes can hold up to like 20 items or something like that, something huge like that for the end game, higher level boxes. So would you pay $4 for 20 extra? Well, let's just say 20. 10 extra
personally,
slots?
No.
No,
it'll be more than 10. It'll
like
be
I
more
said,
than 10 slots.
I'm good at selling. I can sell my junk. I don't know about you guys, but I don't need to carry that much stuff with me.
Especially with the
you
right
say that
level
now,
7.
This shit is completely useless for what. I don't know if you'll be saying that at level 80.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's
what are you going to carry? You're going to carry repair kits? You're going to carry consumables?
My ranger had, 6 sets of elite armor? And I can't carry that neither in my bank slot, and I'd have to carry it on my character.
Why did you need 6
an extra.
Of armor.
Oh, elite armor. It's the prestige armor that costs time and money.
6 different
but either
sets,
way,
though? In your inventory at all times?
Well, it didn't fit in my bank slots anymore. Okay. So Jesus. I needed to put it somewhere, and if I had a chance to freaking purchase one, I would have bought it.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Is like right now, or even like in the first year of the game, we may not need these things, but going further and further on as the game goes on and you start accumulating more and more and more crap, like I could see that becoming something that could be useful.
You need more parties and you need more boxes of fun, and you're just having to fill up.
Yeah, where are you going to put the hundreds of thousands of boxes of fun you're buying for the $100,000 win?
You look down a bit.
You're wake up and you're going to have 400 bag slots, and you're going to have
400 bag slots, and each one has a full stack of boxes of fun.
Yeah, just millions of boxes of fun.
And it's good to note here that you can still buy this with in-game silver. So in the end, if you did $4 seems a bit too steep for you, which it does for, I believe, most of us, at least at the moment, you can do that with in-game silver. So I think another one, a great one to touch on, is Bank Tap expansion, which is almost the same thing.
Yeah, I was about to say that it's a way better investment because it's 30 slots for $6.
Yeah.
And that's in your bank. So.
And just full stop.
And I need to put all my boxes of fun in the bank.
So would you guys pay $6? Like, let's just put aside the fact that you can buy this with in-game silver. So we all know that a lot of this is a fantastic buy for in-game silver. But would you pay $6 for bank slots?
If I was really desperate.
I pay $6 for
if I was really desperate, like I totally would. Yeah.
Really? I feel like I have to as soon as I get
I feel like I might if I was desperate, not by default.
I think a lot of that depends on when it comes to the bank tab expansion or the bank tabs in general, is your consumable stuff is 100% separate, right? Like all of your crafting stuff?
Yeah. Well,
not rare.
Crafting is just in your inventory, doesn't it?
Commons have a spot. I believe commons and I don't think there's 3 levels. I think there's only common and rare, I think. But you have a tab in the bank which you can just fill with as many common
So that's completely separate then.
Yeah.
Right. Wait, but as a cook, I'll say something. As a cook, there are cooking tabs where you can put the most basic stuff. But once you take 2 ingredients and make it into another ingredient, let's say oregano leaves and some other leaves, and turn it into a pile of Ascalonian herbs to make your delicious food with, that no longer can go inside any crafting slot. You have to put
it's
that.
Apparently, according, it's 250 of a particular item.
Okay, which is enough, I think. I assume.
I saw my what is it called? Bank tap slowly full up with cooking ingredients, and I could no longer put stuff in it.
Well, in that case,
so if you're a cook, you will buy this.
In that case, if you're a cook, apparently you can just buy all the tabs you want. It's just that's where all your money's going, and then
don't become a cook.
Don't become a cook.
Mostly because then I have no competition for best chefeteria, but don't become a cook.
All right, I think the last one.
You
want
to be best chef, but you're not willing to spend $10 on a chef's outfit.
I am. I told you, I'm totally up for it.
No honor, man. No honor.
I'll give out my kidney for a chef's outfit in a video game.
Wow.
I have two of them.
You could get like two chef's outfits for that much kidney.
Yeah.
Then you could cook your kidney and eat it. There
British. All right, so the last one to touch on is World Transfer. So 1,800 gems. And
dollars? Oh.
So that's 18, I believe, dollars, assuming it's 100 transfer. What do you guys think? Durin, let's start
with
you.
Why would you need transfer?
Why would you leave our wonderful server?
I think that sounds about right. I mean, given that you can obviously guest on any server you want to, like if you really are wanting to relocate your home server and kind of, you know, make that be, you know, where your PvP stuff is and all that, like, assuming that is $18, that's actually cheap compared to most MMO world transfers.
Right.
So
it seems, yeah, pretty standard for MMO really is, but, you know, $18-$20 for a world transfer, that seems acceptable.
Yeah, I mean,
I'll never use it because I'm not don't need to go anywhere. But
yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, I said that when Star Wars launched, and then we saw how that went. So I won't say never, but
I guess
never say never.
Noob, what do you think?
But at least the option's here.
Yeah, that's true.
What do I think?
Yeah,
what do I think?
Well, let's do the math here. So 1,800 gems, right?
Sorry. I completely forgot what topic we were on. Yeah,
you,
no, why the hell would I need
complete
to,
my sentence.
Why the hell would I need to do, why would I need to change worlds? I don't see a situation where I need to change worlds. Someone
You'd be surprised.
Give me a situation. Give me a situation.
I mean, probably won't have to go with you, but
there's a chef that's better than you.
Oh. Well, but that just requires me finding out their address and just taking a short flight.
Well,
and
$18
cheaper. That's cheap. Yeah.
So
just move.
You know, I want to be the best chef of all servers. That's what my goal is.
This is an aside here, Noob. Do you remember what the transfer, or does anyone remember what the transfer was from gems to silver during the betas?
I said 13, anywhere from 13 to 16.
Silver, yeah. Right? So silver, yes. One gem was about 13 to 16 silver?
No, 100 gems.
100 gems, okay. So let's just
go. I would assume the price is lower for the beta.
Well, yes, let's just assume it's 50 silver for 100 gems. So divide by 2, I guess. So you're looking at 900 silver, so that's 9 gold for a world transfer. I think that's the best way of looking at it because, again, I love the fact that in Guild Wars 2 that you can still pay for all of this with in-game currency. And 9 gold isn't actually that much. Which is
that staying like that?
Yeah, like that's, no, not, like that's
legitimately,
not cheap.
Is it staying like that?
I think your
like,
price
all this stuff will definitely
I think gem price. First off, I think gem prices are going to go up rapidly at launch. And they're going to skyrocket for a while, and then they are eventually going to kind of taper down to some extent. But I think saying that 100 gems will be 50 silver is still lowballing it a lot.
Really? You think it's lowballing it? Okay.
Absolutely. I think the gems are going to be quite a bit more than that. Because, I mean, look at how easy it is to get gold right now. I mean, we were playing in the beta, and at level like 22, I already had like 60 some odd silver, and I wasn't even really trying to get.
Yeah, we weren't trying at all. Yeah.
But I think
this gives no incentive
discussion,
for you to pay money.
That's a good point.
But I think for our discussion though, like we really shouldn't be looking at it that way. One, because we don't really know how that market's going to be.
It's true.
But two, we're also kind of talking about how ArenaNet is going to make money on this game. So it's more so like
let's not dissuade people.
It's not that. It's that we need to look at it like what do we see as something that is worth spending actual real dollars on?
Right.
Because that's where they're going to see investment. If we don't think, you know, bank tab is going to be worth real money, like then that may not be something that they would actually make money on. So, like, given that our discussion is about what they're going to make money, that should kind of sway. Like,
it all factors into
look
it.
At it as,
so there's two ways, because I think we've all been pretty much sticking to that. I believe we've all kind of agreed that it's a good idea. If you want to skip some time to spend real money on extra bank slots, for example, I think we will. There are situations we would do it ourselves, but we all can see that that's probably a good way to go. But for world transfer, would you spend $18 on it, or would you spend X amount of in-game gold on it?
It depends on how much gold I have.
Assuming the worst case scenario, well, I mean,
$18 is a lot.
It depends on the urgency. If my friend was like, "Come over to the server," and I was like, "All right, let me save the gold for it because you know you don't need me there right now." Like, it just depends on the situation I was in, on why I was being moving servers.
Right.
Yeah, given that world transfer is pretty much the most expensive thing, I think, so far that we know of on the list, I don't think that is going to be an amount of gold you're going to be able to get or just happen to have, or that every player will just happen to have on them.
Yeah,
and like, can kind of make that decision on a whim.
It's a good point.
I don't think it's going to be that expensive in terms of real money. Like, $1 to 100 gems doesn't sound right.
Okay.
I really hope that for ArenaNet's sake, it is that expensive because, again, they need to make money on this game.
No,
I hope they don't screw over bloody the EU with their currency conversion.
Ooh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Like that, we could get, like you're saying $18, and I'm going, $18
will transfer.
18 quid. That sounds... 18 quid. Yeah. It's going to cost you 18 quid.
18, like in pounds, a lot of that stuff seems really expensive.
I agree.
Like, to the point where I'm like, I don't want to be spending that money. Well, sorry, ArenaNet.
Just an aside, but I think that's a good way of putting it, because there's a couple of things I want to say here. There's an advantage of having it $1 for 100 silver. I mean, so 100 gems, because I absolutely cannot stand it that Microsoft, for example, with Xbox Live, is 80 points for $1 or some random crap like that. I know you can get discounts on that, and you can get like weird kind of ways of getting around that, but weird amounts, like weird currency conversions like that, is really obfuscatory to the players. It's really bad for people, for example, who maybe don't have as good a self-control, or maybe don't really have a good handle on how much...
Or are drunk,
exactly. And when you have things as simple as 100 gems for $1, you can easily equate the two. And I think that's pretty much the best way it could turn out, in my opinion. So saying...
I think that for the...
Go on.
Go ahead.
This is the second time. Go ahead.
I think that for the players, that's the best way. But again, like ArenaNet looking at it from a business side, it would make a lot of sense for them to go kind of that, you know, 80 to a dollar.
There's a reason Microsoft did
that idea.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they're definitely not the only ones that have done that. And I would say that if they do decide to go that route, at least in this system, you have an option of if you go and spend the money on getting 1,600 points or gems. And you go buy some things and you've got like 250 gems left and there's nothing you want to buy with for 250 gems, you can just turn that into gold.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
That is a good point. Hey. But that's just moving on from there. So you have maybe 100 to 1 or 80 to 1 dollars to gold to gem transfer. But it's really interesting when you start considering other places like Zumiramen. How have other games handled this? Do you know if there's anything else that really has
currency conversion?
Well, like, every
companies come out. Yeah, companies come out like, "What's this VAT, isn't it?" And it's like, no, not to that extent. Like currency conversion, they make up their own currency conversion. Like most things do it, and it's really shoddy.
So to run people through it, what is VAT and how big is it actually?
VAT, I think at the moment it's 20%, and it's just anything you buy, 20% of that is sent to the government.
Okay.
Or you know,
like,
it's
you have
a tax.
Taxes on your internet purchases there?
It's tax. There's weird exemptions, but yeah, I think there's VAT on purchases on the internet.
I'm pretty sure we don't have HST on our. What is it called?
We have GST on ours, yeah.
Yep.
The equivalent.
But there is tax and things like that. So, you know, I can understand, you know, an amount going up, but at the same time, when it's a one-for-one conversion, when something's like $20 in America and it's £20 in England, like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, there's not...
Well, there's a great example of this. How much did you pay for Guild Wars 2?
To be fair, I wanted to fund
stole
them,
it
so
from
I
a
went,
store. Oh my god!
Yeah, I went to ArenaNet and I bought it, and I spent £50 on my standard edition.
And that, and how much is that in US dollars?
I guess like $65, $70.
No, it'd be like 80. I think there's a conversion.
Is it?
Pounds.
It's more than. It's more than
we pay.
Oh, Tarkin says it's 60. Tarkin's on the ball.
Yeah, the standard is $60.
Oh, 60. No, I know it's $60 for the game, but I believe 50 British pounds is closer to $75. And
it's more. It's more than you're paying for your game, basically.
Exactly.
No, yeah. Wrong. I paid more for my game than you did.
Digital Deluxe.
Yep.
That
yeah,
aside.
So I mean, yeah, I mean, and like they have to be, or they have to be balanced with that because. You know, whilst it can be more, you know, you look at it and it's more expensive here, it's also looking over at America and being like, why the fuck are they getting it cheaper?
Yeah.
Like, exactly. I don't want to support your game when you're doing it like this, when your currency conversion is so flippy floppy, and we also have to abide by your currency conversion in terms of money to gems and gold to gems. Like, there's sort of two layers there of currency conversion.
Absolutely.
And if there's one out of whack or they're both out of whack, it's like, no, I spent, you know, more than they did on their game. Why are you like charging me more for this? So they have to be careful.
If you had to ballpark it, what would you personally pay in terms of pounds for 100 gems? Say, given that we are saying it's $1 for 100 gems in the US.
Like
70p?
50p? 50, 70? Yeah, 50, 70.
Yeah.
Probably. But, like, that's such a weird amount that they wouldn't charge that. It would be a pound.
On the flip side, would you pay £1 when the Americans pay $1 for 100 gems?
It depends on the quality of the items, but
Or let's bump that up a bit more. Would you pay £10 for, you know, the amount that we pay $10 for in terms of...
No, gems. No,
like that's the thing. Like you talk about £1 to $1, or yeah, £1 to $1, and that's
one
like
pound's
yeah,
easy,
whatever.
Kind of yeah, easy to justify. But if you start getting into like double figures, because there is that, like there is the $9.99 psychological barrier. Like there is a reason why that stuff's $9.99 compared to £10.
Absolutely.
So if something's £10, then I'd be like, I could save that £10 and not buy your gems.
yeah. I could just buy that with gold instead because, you know,
it's the time v money thing. So
yeah,
you know, if something, you know, if there's a monocle and that's like if that's like £3 or something, I'd be like, okay, ArenaNet, you know, you've given me this great game, I'll purchase it. But that sort of goodwill and that sort of like I'll forgive you for kind of charging crazy prices. Can only go so far from like, all right, I need to look at value and I need to look at, you know, what I'm really getting for this money.
Really unfortunate that more companies, internet companies don't like sort of do that where they, you know, change their prices for international currencies. Like Steam, I know is a bad example where it's $20 US and it's £20 British, you know,
it sometimes depends,
I suppose. But for the most part, it is 1-to-1.
CD Projekt did it where if you bought The Witcher in England or you bought The Witcher in Europe, I think they were like, because it's cheaper over here, we'll give you the difference in store credit.
CD Projekt is like possibly the best store online.
CD Projekt's got some really nice people over there.
But you know,
so.
if they did that, but it's difficult because if you say to us, we're paying £1 for more gems than you pay $1 for, like. All sort of logic goes out the way when you're talking about money.
Yeah,
like people would be like, "That's not fair."
Exactly.
So
because you're still transferring 100 gems to whatever in-game gold and equivalent, whatever in-game items.
Yeah,
and it's still all digital. We're still talking about digital goods here, and to the point where it's not like you're paying for shipping to the UK.
That's kind of like also a barrier for me that I've still not gotten through is this idea of digital goods. Like with games and stuff, I'm fine with digital games, but when it comes to like an item within a game, I'm like, is this game worth it?
I'm with you as well. Like I've played a few other free-to-play MMOs here and there, and when it comes to actually throwing money at it, I've never gotten myself to do so for that same reason. Like
Tribes, I did. I spent some time on Tribes.
it's this idea of like, you know, 2 or 3 years from now, am I really going to be playing this game anymore? Will this money have just been for nothing? There's nothing to bring back out of that. Like you said, with a digital game, you can always reinstall the game and play it and keep playing it or whatever. But like these items, there's no like.
When I've logged out, it's gone. There's nothing to show for my purchase. And a lot of people say the same for digital games, things like that. But I'm like, no, there is something to show there's the game. Whereas, you know, if I don't get to wear a monocle, I don't get to look at my monocle all the time. The only time I see my monocle is Guild Wars 2 time. So it's like, I don't know. It so all depends on like how much
to round
playing
out the discussion. How do you feel are the chances, like looking at how much they're charging you for the game over there in the UK, and coming from Australia where we used to get freaking shafted on games every time around, and it's on digital stores it happens
yeah,
to go
you're
the opposite direction.
Worse, to be fair.
No, that's a wonderful thing. On digital stores it's gone the other direction, that now because our dollar's reached US parity or is even slightly worth a little bit more than US dollars sometimes, everything's actually crashed in prices. So now we've gone from paying $110 for an online game to paying $60 for an online game. It's absolutely wonderful. So I'm like, I actually have like, from on high I can look down and say, hey, I really know how you're feeling over there. So
yeah.
Over there, like, how do you feel? What do you feel the chances of, like, looking how much they're charging you for the game? What do you feel the chances of them not shafting you? Like, how do you feel about it going forward? Just so we can move on.
Minimal chance that they're not going to shaft us. Really, just a minimal. This isn't anything against ArenaNet. This isn't anything. Like, I'm not personally attacking them. I'm just saying they want to make money, because every business does, and they've got to do it in an easy way. Balancing currency is never going to be easy. You balance currency in one place, you've got to balance it for another and another and another and another. So I've kind of accepted that we probably might get shafted. And if the quality's there, then I can take a good shafting for a good game.
it's really unfortunate that even has to happen. Like, I feel like if you are going to make a game for a global market, like, that work needs to go in. Like, people shouldn't have to be like, yeah, we're going to get shafted. There's nothing I can do about it, so I guess I'll just pay the money. Like, that shouldn't have to happen.
Yeah.
No.
And it all comes down to ArenaNet. They said they'd make a lot of announcements to the Gem store close to release. And release is getting really close now, only about a month and a half away almost, maybe a little bit more. Oh, my God, it's going to be so close. Anyway, so they haven't really released too much in terms of their plans for the future of the Gem store. I know I really wanted to talk about this week, but I also am couching this in. Everything could change coming up. And I hope one of the announcements they're doing there is a more closer to parity for UK pricing. I really do. Because we have a bunch of guys in the guild, like Maystack, for example, Zumi Rama, definitely, from the UK. And I hate seeing it. I hate seeing that they're getting what we used to have here in Australia, but now in 2012, getting overcharged for digital goods. It's absolutely bullshit. But anyway, we should move on. We're going to talk about...
I hope they make gems really expensive gold-wise, is what I hope.
Right. But either way, like, there's items here on the gem store. We've gone through the positive and semi-positive and the philosophical side of the gem store, but the stuff on here that I believe is a little bit shady. So let's start first. Nubarama, what is your opinion on die packs in the Guild Wars 2 gem store?
So during the beta, I got, what, 5 dies or something like that? And 2 of them were rare, 1 was uncommon, etc. And if they're going to keep that same drop ratio and they didn't, like, accelerate the amount of dies you drop, why would I ever need to buy a die?
Ooh. That's interesting. Well, okay, so to lay it out for everyone.
Especially if it's a random die. Sorry.
So to lay it out for everyone, there's 400 dies-ish. 400 dies exactly in Guild Wars 2, but not all of them are unique. Like, you're going to see multiple shades of black, for example. Like,
and, that's a lot of dies, though.
Yeah, and more for those who went there
a
couple weeks ago.
We're going to see 50 shades of gray.
for those who went there a couple weeks ago, they've recently confirmed that before you would have 400 dies, and when you find one, when you unlock it, you find them through drops in the world and stuff like that. It's unlocked across the entire account. So any character you can make unlocks all of the dies for everyone, so you can have the same dies across all your dudes. If you find, like, the mystical golden die of awesomeness, you can have them all for everyone. I'm saying that very quickly because they've now come back on that and said, no, you're going to have to unlock all the 400 dies if you want to for all of your characters individually.
That's so shady.
Right.
That's gruesome.
When we talked about that a couple weeks ago, we were saying, yeah, it sounds kind of shady, because what they're also doing is for $2, assuming, on the gem store is a random die pack. So you can't buy individual dies either on the auction house, they're not on the trading post, for example, or really, I guess you may be able to send them between characters and kind of have like an underground die market that way. But in general, on the gem store, you can't go, I want to buy this specific die. You have to buy a random die pack. And in the description here, it might change come release, but on the Guild Wars 2 wiki, we have each die pack contains 7 random dies, 5 common and 2 uncommon / rare. Once the die has been unlocked on a character, and it can be used as many times as you like in color and armored and town clothes. Collect them all. So now what it's not saying there is whether A, you're in a random die pack, you'll find something that you've already unlocked, and B,
that'd be scummy.
I bet you do get repeats.
I don't think you can.
I bet they put repeats in
there. I believe I heard somewhere, I have nothing that I can actually like confirm this with, but I believe I heard somewhere that once you had a die, you wouldn't have that same die again.
Okay. Yep.
It is, the dies are character wide. You can't, like, once you get the die and unlock it, or like you open up the die and figure out what it is, you can't sell it off. It's like tied to you.
Okay, we'll get there in a second, but the second side of this is they are definitely saying here that you'll be getting 5 commons and 2 uncommon / rares. So you don't have an actual chance of getting more or less than that, and we'll talk about the split there in a second. So there's a bunch of things here to talk about just in terms of die packs. So one, I believe from reading here, I actually disagree with some of you, I think one of you said here, what it says here is you have a random die box, and how dies work is you get the die, you actually get a little unlock thing. So you don't get a die immediately. It doesn't immediately get unlocked in your character. First, you get an item that you then double-click to unlock the die for your character, right? And what it says here is you get 7 random dies. And what that sounds like to me is you get 7 random items, which means it doesn't necessarily have that inbuilt cancellation of not being able to give you something you've already unlocked. Like, for example, if you bought the one die pack and got Mystical White, and you then double-click that Mystical White to unlock it for your character, if you bought a second die pack, I believe you can still get Mystical White as an item from the second die pack.
Like I said, I believe I heard, I don't have anything to confirm it, but I believe I heard that that's not the case, that once you have a die unlocked on your character, that die will no longer drop anymore. It's not that hard to code in, so it's...
We can hope that's the case.
Like I said, I'm pretty sure I heard that was the case. I just don't have anything to say.
Let's talk about either way. So, let's move on for someone who doesn't have as strong an opinion. Mage Knight, what would you say given either side of the case? In one side, if you can only find things you haven't already unlocked, then by spending X amount, you will definitely get all the dies in the game. And on the other, if you do find things from the die boxes that you've already unlocked, then you can spread them to other characters and you can maybe unlock them for other characters. What are your thoughts, Mage Knight?
I'd rather have the former, to be honest. Like, I'd rather have just fixed, like, you can't get repeats. Like, I mean, if I'm spending money, I don't want repeats, basically. Like, I would hate to have the onus on me to trade other dies, get new dies or whatever. That would kind of suck. I'd rather just not see duplicates.
Sumi Ramen?
Yeah, I think it would be incredibly scummy, and I'd feel kind of ashamed of Arena if you could get repeats, because, yeah, there's nothing there. Like, they're never useful. A repeat is never useful. Like, with, like, Pokemon cards and stuff, it was kind of useful to get some repeats. But
like, the only way it's useful is if you give it to another character.
Yeah,
kind of. But then at some point, it's like, what if all my characters have common mystical white? Sorry if that's not a common, but you know what I mean. So what if all my characters have that common color? Or if I don't even have another character? What if I'm just rolling with one main and I've got 18... and red energies or red dyes. Like, yeah, it's not great. What I would like to see is a full die set for a set amount of money.
I don't
know why. I wouldn't buy it, but I think it would be nice if Arena went, you over there with lots of money, more than sense, come spend $60. Like, make it cheaper, obviously. You know, give people a discount on buying them all, but you know, just give people the option to be like, I don't want to buy all these random packs. I just give me the option to unlock it all.
I think
that'd be nice.
I think we can all pretty much stay here and stand on a box and say, hey, ArenaNet, if you're actually going to be charging us for absolutely random dice and nothing that doesn't check back against what you've already unlocked, that's full bloody shady. Also, I think we can all say...
It's a good fucking way to discourage sales of those dice if they're going to make it, you know... you get two of the same dies. That's a good way to,
it's a good way to discourage
not buy those sales, things.
Like any sales, like pets, anything like that. It's like, I don't want to be funding this sort of ID.
Tarkin says that.
To some extent, yeah, well, I was going to mention what Tarkin is saying here is that you can place four dies at the Domestic Forge and create a new account-bound die. So if they do make it so that you can still get the same kind, you can get four.
What if the Forge die was a duplicate, though? How crappy would that feel?
What, if you put in four Mystical Whites and got a Mystical
White?
Oh, and
you've already unlocked the die? Oh,
yeah.
God.
You put four Mystical Whites and you get a Knight Black, but you already have Knight Black, so you're just like, oh, well, time to get another three and try again.
I hope that there's some kind of a system in case.
Kind of leans to you getting repeats. The fact, if, you know, if...
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
If there's no way of getting repeats, why even have that in there?
Yeah.
Or it's like, a circle of you getting fucked over is what that is.
I agree. And so, would you guys buy a die pack for $2? Noob?
No. I'd rather spend that money to fund terrorist groups or something like that. Something worthwhile. Yeah. I'd fund like some organization that I completely hate, but I wouldn't care because I don't know.
$2 for a die pack isn't the worst. It's not the end of the world. I think it's alright. It's not amazing, but.
I'm fine with having just one color. Like, if I get a black, I will be a goth. If I get a green, I will love trees. Exactly. Like, I'm not that bothered about having a specific color for me because really, that color doesn't like a monocle is a monocle, but a color is like, it doesn't really bother me if I've got one pink shoe and one blue one on.
Durin?
I don't really care.
I think I would probably be okay with buying die packs up to the point where I end up getting a repeat, and then I'll probably be done.
Ooh, that's a good point. Yeah, I guess you can. It's like kind of like gambling. Like you put in $2, whatever. And
you're gambling for dies.
You roll the dice until you
get shafted, and then you're like, all right, fuck it, whatever. It's just
exactly. Done. Yeah, you walk away while you're still ahead.
And on that note, I will never ever spend real dollars on dice. I'll say that right now. But I might spend in-game currency. Like you never know. Like it's only 200 gems. Yeah, and seven dice for 200 gems. Like that sounds relatively like two gold or whatever that translates.
Again, this
sounds like a oh sorry, go ahead.
No, go on. You go.
This sounds like another like level 80 money sink type thing where it's just like, well, I've got so much gold, I'm just gonna throw it all and die and get something crazy.
Yeah.
And so, see, I'm noticing a trend here, and this is a little worrying for me because, again, like going back to the discussion of
how Arena is going to make money,
game,
yeah,
and everything we're talking about here, like most people's consensus, at least within this group here, is, well, I'll just, you know, I'll at level 80, I'll have all this money, and I'll just buy it with gold instead.
They should really make that stuff really expensive.
Well, and I think that that's going to be fixed by having the gold to gem currency system, like the conversion rate.
Really, Jack.
It's not going to be controlled by them. It's controlled by players.
Yeah.
So the people who buy the gems and are selling them for gold, they control how much they are sold for.
Yeah. For example, if a die pack is only purchasable on the Black Flying Trading Company for gems, then that price is going to inflate once people hit 80. Because people will want to start unlocking the awesome dies for their armor without having to do a lot of, in terms of actual in-game grinding for dies and drops and that kind of stuff. And you can definitely see the prices rising. Yeah.
Yeah, I think what we're going to see is... Well, that's the thing, though. I think that what we're going to see is going into this system here. I think that anything that is on this gem store that is you know obviously purchasable with gold, you are going to pay out your ass for it.
Right. I hope it's like 5 gold for 100 gems, or maybe more.
That's a lot. 5 gold, man.
It sounds like a lot, but we're talking about like 80, when we were in level 20s, 30s, or whatever.
Right. What are you going to do with all that gold? You're going to spend it on stuff like this, and you won't be paying with your money. You'd be paying with your gold. And that doesn't get ArenaNet money in real life.
Exactly. That's the biggest issue here is that ArenaNet needs to make money on the gem store, and that's going to be their biggest way, I think, of doing it is not so much just specifically the people that are buying gems. I think the where they're going to make the most money are the people who are buying gems specifically to sell it for gold because the majority of players aren't going to want to spend real money on it. They're going to want to spend gold, and they're going to have to use a lot of gold to do those gems, And there are going to be those people who are you know, basically the gym traders who are, that's all they're doing is they are spending real money on gyms and turning around and flipping it for gold.
So what do you guys think that means for the economy? I'm not really too big on the MMO thing. So tell me what you think that is the greater impact of that.
Well, I think that I don't know of another MMO that has a system like this, so it's hard to really tell. But I think that in general, it's going to be. At first, it's going to be very similar to when the Real Money Auction House hit Diablo 3, where you're going to see gems for probably like hundreds, if not thousands, of gold for maybe, you know, a small stack of gems, and that's going to balance out at some point. But I think in general, the items that are going to be on the gem store only, obviously there are other items that will exist outside the gem store, and you'll be able to purchase those through the trading post in the game, and those prices will not be affected whatsoever by, or will be minimally affected by the gem store, mostly because the stuff in the gem store is mostly vanity and boosters and stuff. You're not going to find gear on there.
Right.
But for all the stuff that's actually on the gem store, like I said before, you're going to pay out the ass for it. I know that's going to happen because those people that are doing nothing but buying gems and turning around and selling it for gold, like, they're putting real money into this. They're investing their own hard-earned cash into doing this. So they're going to want to make sure they get a good return on that.
Yeah. And there's a great point to say that in the betas, the reason why it's pretty iffy for me doing that conversion before from, like, whatever it was during the beta, it was 16 silver, whatever it was. I said about 50 silver maybe would be a good conversion. I'm going back on that. Because in the betas, we were given gems for free. Like, we were given, I think it was 2,000 gems or something, like 1,200 gems for free to spend on the gem store to see if that's all working. And that obviously would significantly drive down prices because everyone has it. And as Duren said, if the only way to get gems in this game, like to start off the genesis of gems, aside from trading real in-game gold, because that won't be the biggest price modification, is spending real money for gems, then I can definitely see gem prices going significantly higher. Zumi Ramen, I think you had something to say. What do you think is the greater impact of people gem trading and that kind of stuff on the game?
Well, like you were saying there before about like people who will literally just spend time doing that. It's interesting because the gold they get from selling gems is like, will they just like reinvest it in gems and just drive to control the entire economy? Like, will there be some weird, like, shady organization guild who's just running the gem economy purely because, you know, they buy gems for real money, they flip it, they reinvest that gold in gems, and then they sell it for the price they want to.
I don't know that
they fixed the prices so you can't sell gems and then buy the same amount of gems with the money you've earned.
Thought gems could be sold for gold.
The main thing
once
here.
Once you sell those gems for gold, that's not enough gold to buy 100 gems again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there a tax? Again,
No. Well, they've kept the prices so there would. I'm assuming there's a ceiling to how much you can buy gems with, and there's going to be a ceiling for how much you can sell gems with.
Well, there's and not only that, but I believe, like, again, because this is all being player run. Right. I imagine the way that the gem purchasing is going to work is probably going to be very similar to the commodities auction house on Diablo 3, where you don't get to choose who you buy it from. It's going to automatically sell it to you based on probably the lowest thing on the auction house.
All right, that's fine then. It'll be interesting. It'll be an interesting experiment.
But this is this all guessing, or is this based off stuff we've actually heard from ArenaNet?
What do you mean?
Like, are we basing this off like what ArenaNet said?
I'm basing that off of what I'm guessing that they would probably do in order to control, or in order to allow the player economy to control pricing of gems.
Right, because at the moment, going off what
the
they
players
have
don't
game,
sell gems to other players; they sell it to ArenaNet, who then sells it to other players.
Yes, but at the moment in the game, I believe it's pretty much parity. I don't think there's any like there's not even a tax in there. Like, at the moment, you can just straight up go gems, gold, gems, and not lose any money.
No,
really?
Wrong.
Okay, so run me through how it was in the game, Noob. If I'm not wrong,
I believe it was around 6 gems or 6 gold from 100 gems and about 16 gold for 100 gems.
What do you mean? So
if you turned your gems into gold, you would get about 6 silver, and if you turned your silver into gems, that cost 16 silver to get 100 gems.
Okay, so they were independently fluctuating amounts.
Right.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that Arena was setting limits. It's more like they're trying to keep those on two separate sliding scales, of which we don't really know how they're
working. They will set limits.
And you guess. Does anyone...
Well, but I mean, if they didn't sell limits, like Ben's or Zumirama said, it's going to go crazy. And that's not something they would ever want.
So it's just...
Well, and those limits are setting are being set, it seems like, in real time based on the supply and demand for gyms.
That's why they kind of have that fluctuating thing they're showing. For a crazy month, they don't put limits on it. And then for the rest of the time, they just go, actually, guys, yeah, it didn't really work. Sorry about that.
I think that's far more likely.
And they set limits on it.
And if the player is selling basically their gems to ArenaNet, and the ArenaNet is the one handling the gems back out to other people, that is actually very similar to the way the commodity thing works on Diablo 3. So it sounds like that's a kind of system they're going for here for that exact reason.
Trying to make it, you know, exploit proof.
Yeah. Right. So you can't have one player selling gems exclusively to this other player.
Interesting. So we'll shelf that because, we're not working up stuff that Arena has specifically announced, and I can't wait to see how it'll work out in game. But so we'll return back to the overall topic. Things that ArenaNet can do to get money, and I believe the way Guild Wars 1 worked and the way we're all excited for Guild Wars 2 to significantly capitalize on is by selling expansions. So how Guild Wars 1 worked was their model was the original game was $60 and the original plan was 6 months, they'd be releasing an expansion of content, which back then was as big as an entire continent. So similar to a WoW expansion in a lot of ways in terms of size.
It was a lot faster.
But turning around the all around much faster and getting...
Was it really 6 months?
Oh, no. So the plan was 6 months.
It was a 6 month development cycle.
Okay.
Noob, you probably remember better than I do. So how did it actually turn out? Run us through how Guild Wars 1 developed.
Basically, so Guild Wars 1 came out in 2006. No, 2005, around August 2005. Jeez. And then, and then a year later, Factions was released in April 2006, right?
Wow.
So it was 1 year, and the development cycle was probably a lot shorter. And then... 6 months after that, in October, Nightfall was released. So it was a really quick development cycle. So I'm assuming they developed both Nightfall and Factions. And they were planning to release another expansion called Utopia, which they canceled in favor of a smaller add-on pack. Which is Eye of the North, yes. And that's how they banked their money on. Because these were basically full-price games they were selling it as, WoW does.
Exactly. It was a subscription fee. Well, did Duran go on?
A question I have is, given that they... Excuse me, hang on a second.
But yeah, so is it but with no subscription fee? So just to round it out before returning to Durin, what that meant was you had a really great kind of system where not only were we essentially paying over that year gap, a lot more, I think it would turn out to be, than most people would for a subscription game, but we're also getting tons and tons of new content and over a very short period of time. 6 months was amazing. It got to the point where we'd have a massive amounts of excitement and a lot of the reasons why people fell in love with Guild Wars 1 because we were continually excited about the game and how it was growing, how it was evolving, because new classes would be added, new areas would be added, new gameplay styles would be added, and things were able to continually shift in terms of meta. And for example, if you're into PvP, things like that were the way and course of Guild Wars 1. And that's just a run through of Guild Wars 1. I'm not saying the Guild Wars 2 will work the same way, but before we get into that, Darren, what's your question?
Well, my question is kind of related to that to some extent. Given that they released that game with kind of a promise of, 6 month dev times for expansions, so, kind of hitting hard and heavy with the expansions, and that what actually came out of that were really only two expansions and a small add-on, and then they just kind of stopped. Is there a worry that that's
development started?
Right. But is there a worry that that's going to happen yet again with this, where 2 years from now they're just going to stop making more content for it because they're going to make Guild Wars 3 instead?
It's interesting.
There's still content being added to Guild Wars.
There's still content being added to Guild Wars 1. I think their long term plan is pretty safe. Yep. You can be guaranteed of that.
But let's just slow down there. It's interesting because to address the core of his question. It wasn't the fact that they stopped making content and that was a bad thing. As other people said, that they did continue making content. But even beyond that, the expansion cycle was so successful that so many people loved it and got into it and stayed on and kept buying more expansions, at least for those first two expansions, that the not only did the demand for it exceed their ability to make it on that quicker dev cycle, because they were really crushing themselves, but beyond that, like, the quality of the content, the amazingness of the content they produced was what in the end allowed ArenaNet to say, hey, if we want to keep up this quality, maybe we should actually consider making a new game. So you can't really couch it negatively in saying they stopped making content for us and therefore it's a bad thing. It was more of so great that it ended up in them deciding to jump off and say, hey, we did so well in this first one, we're going to move on to a new game. And on top of that, they did continue to release significant amounts of content in terms of extra
a lot of it free in terms of extra missions,
balancing, that kind of stuff. It was really great.
I just hope that they continue support for this game beyond in terms of real like chunky expansion type of content, like stuff to add, because like you're saying, they add, you know, balance changes and maybe a new class here and there or something, like, but they stopped on, you know, like you said, they kind of had a promise out of the gates of, you know, they're going to do expansions on this dev cycle and they're going to continue releasing those. And it kind of reminds me a little bit of the Left 4 Dead 1 promise of this, you know, constant flow of content. And then next thing you know, a year later, they released a whole new game.
Yeah.
And like, I'm a little worried that maybe, you know, with the massive success of Guild Wars 2 and assuming whatever their expansion schedule is for that is also a massive success, if they end up doing the same thing again and be like, well, you know, here it is 2015, maybe we should look at, instead of releasing more expansions for this game, maybe we should just make another game that's even better, and kind of leaving us in the dust of like, well
is
we
that
really like this
a
game.
Good thing or a bad thing?
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I think your that model can't work for Guild Wars 2, in my opinion.
Oh, that's like, a very good point.
The quality bar set by Guild Wars 2, the amount of time they put into Guild Wars 2, like, no offense to Guild Wars 1, but I'm just saying Guild Wars 2 is a whole lot more complex than Guild Wars.
Oh yeah.
We're not going to see 6 months.
You won't be able to flip off an expansion in 6 months, because you'll get it. And I think one bad expansion can really burn people on the game. Like, Cataclysm, absolutely, for a lot of people, has totally killed World of Warcraft. Like, I know, obviously,
good.
their numbers,
good.
In my opinion, Cataclysm is
terrible.
It's a big reason why I've quit, but like, Guild Wars 2 relies so much on people. Like, World of Warcraft has a sort of sustainable model even when people drop off, but you start getting people dropping off in Guild Wars 2 because they released a bad expansion, and, you know, it starts getting worried.
At the same time, Guild Wars 2 doesn't have a subscription fee, so if you don't want to buy the new content, you don't have to.
People drop off because of one expansion, and one, they don't have to play that content necessarily, and two, they can always come back when the next expansion is released, assuming that it's better.
But what I'm saying is, like, would people, like, for some people they might not, like, you might just see diminishing returns on people.
Okay, so I think it's a good point to slow things down and break down this conversation, because there are a bunch of things here to talk about. So I think first, moving on from Duren's question, because it was a good one, but as Zumi correctly pointed out, it might not be particularly meaningful to talk about, because they cannot produce Guild Wars 2, and they have not said they would, like, they never promised to, in the same way they released Guild Wars 1. It will not be a 6 month dev cycle. So let's
that wasn't necessarily the question, it was more so like continued support and whether they would just jump onto another game.
I think Guild Wars 3 will exist, in my opinion.
I think not they've learned.
So let's actually ask the question. Let's break this down into an actual question. Noob Rama, how do you think that the dev cycle and expansion cycle will work for Guild Wars 2? How will they get your money?
I think they've learned a lot from Eye of the North and the Guild Wars Beyond content they're doing, and I think they're going to make a lot smaller content released faster. And then after, let's say, a year and a half, they'll release the big expansions.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's the best way they're going to do it, because Eye of the North, they're not going to add entire campaigns, but rather, you know, end game content, as well as stuff that adds, you know, prestige weapons and small campaigns that people will actually play for a lower price, but at a speedier rate.
Interesting.
And people would get all over that.
So instead of just putting like one new class and like a whole new content, you put like one quest chain and some new items or something.
Right. Something like
Yeah. So maybe
not
something
a quest chain,
maybe not,
but something
not so
bigger.
Much a
Or still, like, a few questions.
A new region.
So basically, not something that's so much a proper expansion as much as, like, DLC. A form of MMO DLC.
I could see that being strong, especially with their sort of microtransaction-based format. Although I would still like to see those big content packs with new classes and stuff.
Right. I feel like they'll exist.
We're definitely going to see that stuff.
Ryman said, together. They're not going to be able to produce it in 6 months. They're going to have a longer development cycle. And they're going to supplement that with the shorter, smaller DLCs.
Yeah,
so that's what awesome.
What if there's like...
Let's slow down. Huh? So Nibirama, just to break that down to a conciser statement, do you believe that they'll... concurrently develop, so like to get your money, do you want them to concurrently develop small missions and so mission packs and so on and so forth between large releases? And what kind of time frame would you like to see that on?
I think that's something they could pull off in 6 months, maybe even shorter, on a shorter development cycle. And the majority of the work I feel like should go into the bigger expansion, because I feel like something as small as that wouldn't, you know, cause as much development.
Or you could just have two sides of the dev team, like a smaller element of dev team working.
Yeah, exactly.
Guild Wars 1, the
ArenaNet team still has a small dev team working on pushing out Guild Wars 1 content for like the Guild Wars Beyond, bridging Guild Wars 1 and Guild Wars 2. I think they're going to do something like that by, you know, every couple of months they're going to shoot out a DLC and you can buy that and you can find out what's going on, etc. And maybe that'll play into, you know, oh crap, I'm learning new things, and that, you know, points to the expansion, you know, oh god, what's going on, and then you're going to buy the campaign to see what's going on.
And so you'd say you'd like a larger expansion in more of like a 1 year or 1.5 year kind of time cycle.
Right.
Interesting. Well, so Zumirama, what do you think? What do you feel? What changes would you make to that? What do you think of that entire idea?
To be honest, like that is what I was. It's the only way that makes sense in terms of keeping things going and keeping content going. What I'd like to see is, for expansion packs, is obviously they'll come out retail, but I'd like to see ArenaNet offer discounts buying through them. Like, I think it would be smart if it's cheaper to buy straight through them.
Interesting,
because they'd make 100%. Obviously, you know, yeah, they just make 100%. It just works out better. You know, they charge this in stores, but you get it from us, and it's this much.
I think Noob's pretty much
already an MMO people can buy online.
Yeah, and I think Noob's pretty much nailed it. I love this idea, but I want to go around the table because there's another side of this I want to talk about. But Mage and I, what would you say about this entire idea of smaller packs with the 1.5 year or so expansion kind of cycle?
Yeah, I think that's a decent thing. Like, I would probably skip some of the smaller packs and just wait for the major expansions. But I mean, who knows? Maybe I would go for some of the smaller packs if I really like the quest, what the quest looks like, or the area, or the items, or whatever they add to those.
Well, like,
you charge for them. Yeah.
For me, the two main things are new classes and new areas. Like, those are the two like big drives for me to spend money on. So if
you were to get like a smaller pack, would you say you would purchase one if it had a new area, or would you say only if it had a new class I would buy it?
I would buy it if it just had a new area, if the area looked interesting enough, and I felt like I was starved for content.
Right. Duren, what are your thoughts on this?
All right, I got something here that might blow your guys' mind.
Okay.
How would you feel about them, you know, making those larger expansions or those smaller ones, whether they be paid for or not, allowing the players to purchase those via gems?
That seems like the logical decision. Like, that's what Eve kind of does, right? Like, not that even Guild Wars are even remotely the same thing, but
it's the idea of being able to use your currency you earned in game to pay your way through.
If you are a virtual economist, you can like finagle your way upwards to.
I'm sorry, but Nate and I kind of rolled with that punch, and I'm still sitting here shocked. That is an insane idea, Duren. That is insane.
Think of it this way, Cynic. Like, if they were to announce this major expansion that they've been working on or whatever, 6-8 months ahead of release, and you decide like, I'm going to just start saving up a bunch of gold and just start just banking gems and purchasing this game with my gems. Like, you might think, like, for you personally, like, oh, this is great. I don't even have to spend real money on this. I just have to play the game that I already love playing and you know, buy the game that way. But ArenaNet's still making money on that because somebody had to buy those gems.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yep. Meanwhile, dedicated players are in the game farming up their gold to try to like buy enough gems to get the expansion pack, or people who are too lazy just put money into the gem system and buy it that way.
Right, but that's taking... You're losing sales from that hardcore audience that are farming
That's the thing, though, Noob. You're not losing sales because, like I said, somebody had to buy those gems that you're buying with gold. So ArenaNet's still making the money off of it.
There's not a fixed amount of gems. I feel like they're going to constantly be flowing gems into the economy.
Maybe.
Well, you think there's going to be a fixed amount of gems?
No, no, no. There's not a fixed amount of gems.
If they're limiting the amount of gems coming into the economy, then the price of the gems will skyrocket in gold, assuming people are saving up for an expansion, right?
Right.
At some point, that'll get to the point where some people who only spend maybe 20 hours a week versus people who can spend 40 hours a week will say, okay, fine, I think this is getting too much for me. I'll just pay for it with real dollars. That's one way of doing it. I think it's okay, and I love the idea of expansions via
game economy. But that also creates discounts for people, because if you can buy it all with gems, then you're going to have what? You're going to spend X amount of money on gems, and you're going to buy the rest of it, and then you have a discounted game.
Oh, that's an interesting way of doing it as well.
Yeah. Yeah,
but
yeah, exactly.
That would mean they're not getting 100% of what they could possibly get.
And that's the number one fallback, because we are talking about ways that Arena can get money. And if you and I open up to the gems, the people who are spending 40 hours a week on getting that money and getting those gems via the in-game gold are the people who would pretty much be there day one purchasing your content.
Right, exactly.
Well,
they're not
but the
there
thing,
anymore.
The thing, Noob, is that, you know, going back to what Zumi was talking about how it would be great if they were to have kind of a discounted version of it on their site that you buy directly through them because they get 100% profit. How is this any different than that? They're still getting 100% profit out of it. It's just instead of buying it directly from the site, you're doing it by playing the game.
But that would still mean they're not getting 100% of what they could possibly get.
Yeah, they could get more in the end if they just said, hey, $20, new piece of content,
like,
pay with an ISO.
Like Cynic said, these people who are going to be farming for gold to buy an expansion are going to be, like you said, the ones who are buying the game immediately.
They could make it a prohibitively high amount of gems, like $40 gems or something.
Yeah, absolutely. It would have to be a huge amount of gems.
That would also destroy an economy. If you bring that in,
that is a potential danger.
People
would just stop spending.
Exactly.
I know people have weighed against them, but would you buy like a season pass for Guild Wars 2 DLC?
Absolutely. Like, yes. Knowing what happened with Guild Wars 1, I would totally drop $100 on just like all content for Guild Wars 2 forever. That'd be amazing. But that would be so hard for them to do. They would never do that.
In my opinion, it wouldn't be worth it. But if they said, we're going to be releasing this a definitive amount of content, definitively it'll be worth $60. But you can buy a season pass that will get you everything for $40. Like, because they get a $40, and sure, you may have eventually spent the $60, but they've definitely got... It's the idea of the season pass, isn't it? It's a definite sale.
I think the problem with that is the idea of already knowing we're going to make this definitive amount of content. This is all we're going to make for the game. And so you already know, like, well, okay, then if they're making this, we can probably guess about how many years it will be before these are all released.
What about actual season passes?
Yeah, it's a season that's six or one year, and you have
like season one pass. Okay.
Because I feel like once they have roll out that big expansion and they're working on the next one, there comes more DLC.
Bam. Okay, I see what you mean.
That's a cool idea.
Because I would legitimately buy that, just have it in the back of my head.
That's right, Anna. You better be listening to this. that check better be coming soon.
Can you just imagine, like, if you bought it, you know, you wake up one day and in the email it said, oh, by the way, your game has got a new region in it. And it's like, great. Feels kind of free because you paid for it months ago, but it feels like on that day it feels free because you're getting this and you don't have to buy it and it's straight in there. Like, I think that psychological reward as well is powerful enough. Like, I'd straight up buy it just so I could have all 100% of the content and not worry about constantly topping up my ArenaNet wallet or whatever it's called.
I would say I could see them doing that, but I could see them maybe doing that going into the second year. I think they need to kind of show like everybody what kind of content they're going to be releasing, but also kind of for themselves see like what percentage of their player base is actually buying more content.
So you think
something like that is actually worth doing?
2 years to the first major expansion?
I'd say one and a half.
Yeah, I think like holiday 2013 is when we'll probably see the first major
expansion. That's probably a good guess.
I think that's a bit early. I've always been a bit of a skeptic when it comes to Guild Wars. But even
I don't think there's as much content in Guild Wars 2 as we think there is. I don't know. Maybe Star Wars has made me a skeptic, but I don't know.
I kind of agree though. I do agree that we've seen all these beautiful areas in the beta, and there's always that thing in your head that's like, oh, when I can finally go in this full game and play all of it, and then you play all of it, and you're like, oh man, there wasn't as much as I thought in that game. 2 weeks.
Luckily, this Guild Wars 2 doesn't have just PvE banking for it. It has the world versus world.
Yeah, it's got world versus world.
And clearly PvP is a major part
focus.
Of the game.
Yeah, game. Absolutely.
But even beyond
that, also, like, that almost works towards its detriment as well, because we've seen other PvP-centric games and how they've done in the market, and that's generally not well. Yeah. So, that is one thing that is a little worrying about Guild Wars 2 kind of coming out of the gate, is it does have some really, really phenomenal PvP for in-game, but for in-game PvE content, there doesn't seem to be a lot there, and...
Well, that's because we know nothing about anything over level 50, or even level 40.
True, true.
Yeah.
We just don't have any information.
If PvP, they had some weird sort of, tournaments and things like that, but you paid, $5 to get in with the chance of winning great gear.
I don't know. Because tournaments are great.
Tournaments are a bit...
Pay for entry with gems.
You could do that. If you balance everything by saying, you can pay for it with gems, I think that's a lot.
That's just going to be my fallback smart response.
I think it's an interesting idea. I love the idea in this podcast, we came up with two very interesting ways to do it. One would be pay things for gems, or even, pay if you collect this many gems in the in-game store, then you can get a discount in the game. That could be an easier way of doing it. So you don't have a huge land rush for an X huge amount of gems. You can pretty much have all your really top-end players who would love to be there in the first
season
day.
Pass.
I'm pay 100%. For a 25% discount with gems.
Yeah, and on second time, season behind. Pass. Season pass is, I think, even more exciting, because I love the idea of smaller bits of content spread throughout the year, followed by a big expansion after 1.5 to 2 years. I love the idea, and I would be really I would be willing to pay $45. Okay. So
the one thing that worries
those
me about,
checks are being cashed in soon. They're coming.
The one thing that worries me a little bit about the idea of a season pass for something like an MMO is it works very well for a single player game, or even a multiplayer game for map packs and things like that. But in an MMO, when it comes to expansion content, you don't generally have players who don't get it. If you're going to play the game, you're going to have that content,
right?
And so that would almost be ArenaNet giving away money, or just giving up on money they could be taking in, because they know that if you're playing Guild Wars 2, you're going to buy that content.
But that's the point of the season pass. They started off of that statement with, if you're playing Guild Wars 2. The beauty of a season pass is, for people who fall off the Guild Wars 2 bandwagon maybe 6 months down the road, then suddenly they have a bunch of free content in it, as Zoomerun said, something that feels free because they paid for it 6 months ago. And it's
if they fell off Guild Wars 2, why would they be buying a season pass for it?
With Guild Wars 2. Yeah, I don't want to be horrible about it, but yeah, you get them when they love Guild Wars 2, and oh man, I'm going to be playing this game for 2 years, and then 6 months later, oh man, I played that game for 3 months, and then they get an email saying, great, you've got a new region, you're like, oh, I'll get back into it, and then they're like, bang, I love this game, I need to get some gems to get back to where I was. I don't know. It's interesting concept.
Also, the problem with having an a la carte system where you buy, one expansion pack at a time is, if some person realizes, hey, I kind of don't want this anymore, then they're just not going to buy anything after the first DLC. And if you get them hooked on a season pass, they don't have the option to say, I want my money back. You already have their money in your pocket.
That's true.
They just don't want the content you're offering. Even if, you're offering some PvP stuff and they're like, eh. You've already got them. We're getting really horrible here. It started off idealistic.
At that point, though,
dark territory of,
what would you be happy?
Well, that's the thing. I don't think they would break their content up like that. I think it would be the way the content would be broken up is more in just kind of chunks. You would have PvP and PvE content, and that kind of goes back to what I was saying. If you are playing Guild Wars 2, you're just going to buy the content, because otherwise you don't have access to everything everybody else does, and you have basically a kind of inferior, sucky version of the game.
Right. Right.
What if you're not playing Guild Wars 2, bro?
Yeah, exactly.
When you're not, that goes back again. Like, then you're not paying for the season pass.
No,
you're playing Guild Wars 2.
Yeah, you buy it when you're interested.
Exactly.
And then when you're not interested, it pulls you back in.
The point is, you pay season pass when you first get Guild Wars.
That works
and then
once.
Get consent. Oh, well, maybe.
That works once. And that's the thing here is that works once. But if you have, you know, more of the a la carte, you pay for the content as it's being released. I think they would overall they would actually see a lot more money from that than they would trying to do the season pass.
I disagree.
And, you know, God forbid it fails the first time around, and then next thing you know, they're struggling to sell content after that.
But that's why they have a big expansion. It's not like they're only making small incremental DLC packs. Well, we're assuming they're going to have a big expansion.
Say, you know, if you make high quality stuff and, you know, let's, like, obviously very low ball, but 10 people buy the season pass when, you know, it first happens. 6 people think it's great, other 4 don't really like it and they just want to pay by bits. Like, you've still got sort of a big chunk of income coming in where the people, like, some people are going to think the season pass is really worth it and keep buying the season pass because they believe it's worth the money. There's just, I'd buy the season pass every time, in my opinion.
Same. I think it's people like us that, well, people like us is kind of what Durin's getting at, because we are, like, obviously we're doing a Guild Wars 2 podcast. We're the guys who'd be there day one buying it no matter what the price is anyway, right?
Yeah.
But the people you're gaining is the person who gets really excited about Guild Wars 1, does all, like, rushes to end game, loves the game, buys a season pass within 3 months of release, and then the next MMO comes out, or he discovers the secret world and he loves it, and he moves on to that for a while, then forgets about Guild Wars, but you already have his $45, like, you know? That's what
they would have to. I mean, there would be math involved in seeing if the money lost on people like us would be worth the money gained on those people,
right? And exactly,
because that's the other thing too, is that because this is a free to play MMO, this doesn't rely on a constant player base. This doesn't rely on having the highest number of the diehard.
Yeah,
I'm never going to leave this game ever again. It's a revolving door game.
Yeah.
That's what the MMO market is. Like,
you're not
worried about sustaining these people for 5+ years. You're just worried about making sure you're constantly bringing people in.
Like, that's the season pass as well. It's like, you know, you buy a year pass to a theme park because, you know, I'm not going to go all the time, but when I do go, I'm not going to have to pay for it. So, you know, you spend your $40 or however much, and you're like, I can legitimately take a break for 3 months, and then when I find out there's new content, I'll just pop back in, play that, and then, you know, I'll go. And that's like the benefit of a season pass. It's sort of like a theme park ticket. You can just come and go.
I think we've hit that from pretty much every angle now. So we can say that, yeah, as Durin pointed out, there are definite negatives to the season pass idea. And me and Zumi and New pointed out, we believe that's pretty freaking awesome, and we totally jump in on it. So again, it comes down to, if Arena's listening, hey, here's some ideas. You can probably have my money.
I want my freaking check.
The other side of things that I wanted to hit was something we touched on before. That's all couched in if they do, like, overtime small DLC packs, which we're not sure they're doing in the first place. Going back to how Guild Wars 1 worked, the main money income they made was off expansions. And obviously we talked about earlier in this podcast, the gem store. So assuming they don't do any of that DLC stuff, they continue to go off expansions, which is, I think, is probably actually the more likely way of things happening out, even though I hope it goes the other way instead.
Yeah.
Well, but they've tried this smaller DLC stuff out, albeit it was free during the Guild Wars 2 Beyond stuff.
It was free.
I'd probably pay for that stuff.
So, right? But that's the thing. Like, that's a great way of keeping existing players interested. And I think that, by the way, Arena has worked in the past. I actually personally think that's more likely to remain their course of action. So they have the gem store to gain money over time, again, from, as Durin said, people, like, the revolving door of people coming in and out, maybe purchasing some things here and there and then leaving again. And then they have a huge hype cycle and so forth, almost a release level hype cycle for the next expansion, like Rift is doing at the moment. So going back to it, because I think a really interesting point is, obviously we all love the idea of expansion, the new races, new classes, so on and so forth. There's things we can speculate there, but I think we can probably do that after the game's released. There's no real point in doing it now because the game isn't even released yet. But something that Zumi Raman talked about was Cataclysm killed WoW for him. And I would love to have his opinion on why that happened and what could possibly go wrong with an expansion. Zumi?
Cataclysm killed WoW because it felt like an incredibly lackluster MMO, what I'm talking about, a lackluster expansion. Like, it wasn't really focused, sort of they'd blown their wad quite heavily with Illidan and Arthas. They'd used up their big lore, and then, like, they said, Deathwing, and everyone was like, who's Deathwing? Like, they didn't, there was no real belief, like, there's nothing there that people gripped onto. Like, you know, with Arthas and Illidan, you'd played Warcraft, and, you know, you'd play, and you'd been like, yeah, I'm totally going to meet those guys. But with Deathwing, it was like, I don't know who this guy is. WoW Wiki had a traffic spike of, like, 1,000,000% of, like, a Deathwing article.
Like, oh, he's a big rag.
So, and then it actually came out, and the content initially was great. Like, the first couple of areas were fantastic. Some of the quests were, like,
And did they change everything? Like, even the
original
game? Well,
that's the thing.
The thing is, they changed the original game.
The biggest thing that hurt that expansion was the fact
that it was free,
but it was still a part of the development of this expansion. And kind of using your blowing the wad description here, like, they blew their wad with Cataclysm on doing that. So much of their development time went into that.
And, like, all the advertising went onto that, but then everyone got that update, and... great. Okay. Lucky for Guild Wars.
Because it's new continents and you don't have to deal with any of the fixing up stuff that exists.
That's more of a unique thing for WoW that Guild Wars at least wouldn't run into for a very long time, because a lot of that more so had to do with just how MMOs had dramatically changed from, you know, when WoW released to, you know, 7 years later.
And, like, flying mounts and things like that. But yeah, basically for me that the expansion as it went on ran out of steam. It ran out of steam after 2 hours. Well, not two
now, was,
hours.
Was that a case of was, you just being was... over WoW, or was that a case of the lore just not being there for you?
Kind of a bit of both. Like, Cataclysm, like, Wrath of Lich King, I was totally into it and I loved it. Cataclysm, I was kind of like, Jesus, I've been playing this game for, like, 6 years. Like, that's an impressive amount to get out of a game, but at the same time...
Yeah. Well, and with Cataclysm, like... Kind of like you said earlier with the Illidan thing and you know, Wrath of the Lich King, like, you knew who these characters were, and Cataclysm was kind of their big chance to they moved beyond the lore of Warcraft 3 and kind of expended those characters.
Yeah.
And it was their first big chance to really do something unique for the lore of that world, and they didn't.
No, I think...
They played it safe. They played it very safe.
I think it was probably, for me anyway, the first, or one of the first times in the biggest way that the mechanics just looked really creaky in that game. It just looked old. It looked like some of the new stuff they were introducing, like some of the goblin stuff and some of the worgen stuff, you know, it was kind of cool, but it just looked so creaky and so old, and you could, like, sort of
you could almost see the game engine kind of breaking
around, creaking and being like, I need, just let me die. Like,
it's like as you're questing through these zones, like, you're seeing these quests that they're clearly doing something the game has never done before, but it's like you can see the game just like, I see what you're trying to do with this quest, but your game was clearly never intended to do this, so it just looks janky as fuck.
And you know, but it's kind of not Blizzard's fault. You know, the only reason it's Blizzard's fault is because it's your fault you made such a damn good MMO. Like, that's the only way. That's
well,
the only
it,
way.
Not, you not even like that. It's your fault that you made this game in, what was it, 2004, 2005, and that it's still popular.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you made a really good MMO.
The biggest fault with the game is the fact that it's just old.
Yeah,
the game just desperately
needs to die. Therefore, they didn't at 5 years say, "Hey, we're going to be putting out WoW 2."
Yeah,
like, I think it didn't feel like an expansion. It felt kind of half-hearted in a really odd way. It felt like they put a lot into it, but it still felt quite sort of. We're becoming done with WoW. Like, you could see the passion in Wrath of the Lich King, and you could kind of see the passion in Burning Crusade. For me, more so in Wrath, but yeah. You could kind of see it.
So to not turn this into a WoW podcast, I think a great point to move on to here would be saying, so I'd say that the larger consensus here is that, A, obviously the game was getting old at the time, and that's definitely a reason to move on to a new game, perhaps not put out too many expansions. And I believe ArenaNet has shown that they're capable of doing that with their cancellation of Guild Wars Utopia and moving on to Guild Wars 2. I don't think that'll be a problem we see here. The other side we see there is really engaging lore. And this is something that me and Noob Rama, I think, talked about yesterday morning. We talked about the fact that this game ends with us fighting Zaitan, right?
Yes, it does.
Noob, can you run me through how much that leaves for us to still do at the end of this game?
Right, just on the continent of Tyria, so like the Guild Wars 2 continent. There are three more dragons left, like three more elder dragons, like Zaitan level dragons. That's irrelevant of the personal story.
That's
like a quarter of the dragon experience.
I've seen the world map and it's pretty damn huge. Like when they show you where Tyria is, and it's like, okay, that's cool. But the only thing is there, it's like, yeah, it's great to have all this content. It's great to have all this like lore, but you've got to make it engaging. And how many times can fighting a dragon
I think that it can, because
they are very different dragons.
Yeah, they're very different dragons.
So that's the very least.
One of them is red, they're different. One of them is green.
Well, I mean, we had Onyxia, we had Nefarian, we had Deathwing.
Stop it.
Stop it.
And there's going to be Guild Wars 2 extended.
I think
extended
that
cut,
what we're saying here is not only are there more dragons to slay, but they're spread throughout the greater Tyria. So Tyria is a continent on Tyria, the world. Run through. watch Wooden Potatoes videos. I think he was the guy who does amazing lore videos on YouTube. Check that out if you want to know more.
We get a check from Wooden Potatoes as well.
But essentially, Tyria is just a continent, and that's what the same name is used for both. Anyway, the point is that the dragons aren't just on Tyria. Not only are there about three more elder dragons on Tyria, but there's size of
other space.
There's they're from the gods are from space. Humans are from space in this game, by the way.
Well, no, they haven't confirmed.
This is a game about Scientology.
But
like, where this is going.
We can say that over the timeline of Guild Wars 2, it is quite likely that the dragon conflict, let's say, spreads beyond just Tyria, right, Noob?
Right.
Yeah. So that's where the fodder comes from.
The game, it's changed over the last 200 years.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really interesting.
Like the cantons are now like essentially a dictator state, and it's
North Korea.
It's
one of the expansion packs has to go to Kanto, right? It has to be like the first or second one.
They have to.
That's probably.
By the way, if I have not played Guild Wars 1 at all, am I going to be at sea with Guild Wars 2?
No, I'm probably not.
You won't be confused.
Okay. I think that was crazy. I mean that was on purpose. That's why they stuck it 200 years after Guild Wars 1.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. Right,
okay. They're really telling their own story.
Get
with
it,
this.
And the people who don't know it will still enjoy it.
Exactly. And what do you need to know?
I'm just a bit worried when you were like, it could happen in space, and I'm like, is there a secret world, like secret world in like Guild Wars 2 that's going into space that I don't know about?
It's like with Star Wars: The Old Republic. Like the game takes place, I believe, between the
Before the prequel stuff.
So like you know, knowing things and knowing some of those characters from the universe would help in your understanding, and you could come to appreciate things maybe more so than somebody who didn't. But you can play through it and completely understand the entire story that's going on in that world
and still enjoy it because it's a completely separate story.
Yeah, and I was going to summarize it there with all you need to know. Then I realized there's actually quite a lot to summarize. In the end,
yeah.
Wooden Potatoes video is probably the way to go. But as I said, you don't need to. Sometime. You don't need to watch. Oh, I don't know if we're particularly the right people to do a lore podcast. But either way, you can enjoy it with or without knowing the Guild Wars 1 stuff. As Durin said, it is set 250 years in the future. So even stuff we knew from Guild Wars 1 has completely changed over these last 250 years. But coming back to your question, hey, we're still going to be killing dragons. To give you an idea, Zaitan, the dragon we fight at the end of Guild Wars 2, is the dragon of the undead. He's a dragon. Even the description of him is almost unique. So he's a dragon who's made of the corpses of other dragons. Wingspan is greater than airships are large. He's gigantic in size, and he's like, essentially, he's got many tails, many wings, I believe, many heads, and that's just one of the dragons. But beyond his personal like intricacies, he's also the dragon of the undead. So what he did was he raised the continent, or he's part of the continent, which is Orr, a gigantic landmass, which is going to be essentially an undead wasteland, and that's what we have to look forward to at the end of Guild Wars 2. And that's like kind of, I'm imagining it as like a green kind of, not like green as in lush, as in green as like desiccated. Undead. That's what we're looking at in Endgame. But then we're also, there's also like a fire dragon, an ice dragon. So we're looking at like frozen tundras.
I won't go into it. Sorry. but what is it called? What was I going to say?
There's going to be.
Right. I think I have a theory that Zaitan isn't actually a bunch of dead dragons, but he's actually a really tiny dragon, but he's a really good mesmer, so he made a bunch of clones of himself, and now he's just a dragon made up of clones.
I hate you. I hate you.
Couldn't stop.
That reminds me of a really bad
conspiracy theory.
Oh, God, I told you not to say that on the podcast. This is stupid. But
is he actually crying out for help? Like, he just wants someone to stop him from cloning himself over and over again?
True secret to defeating him is just walking up to him and just typing /hug.
Yeah.
So how's the idea to you guys of there being like one expansion set in like this molten kind of rocky kind of area, one expansion like this undead wasteland, one expansion like icy tundra?
Hopefully we have more variability in the area than just one.
Yeah.
Like, I hope that they at least take that kind of idea that I know WoW has done very well with their expansions, is they release an expansion and there's a general theme to the expansion, with Wrath of the Lich King, it was kind of the frozen wasteland kind of theme, but with the zones themselves, there was still a lush jungle.
There's like diversity in them.
That was basically what the Guild Wars original expansions did. It was in Kantha, it's basically like a general Asian theme.
Yeah.
So there's like really smoky, smoggy cities, but at the same time, it's like shrines and stuff like that and jungles.
Yeah.
And it's similar with Nightfall, I'm hoping they do something like that with dragons involved.
And they prove that they can.
I do hope it's not just like, this is the ice expansion, this is the fire expansion, this is the undead expansion.
This is the underwater expansion.
What they did with Kantha, I don't want to keep on referencing back to the original, but it's not just defeating the main enemy, but there was multiple side conflicts going on that you were a part of.
Yeah. Exactly. And so what they did.
I know they obviously won't just say this is the ice one, but you know, I'm hoping.
To say that even though I think the dragon conflict will be pretty much the story of Guild Wars 2. I don't think it'll go pretty much beyond that. I reckon the final Guild Wars 2 expansion or DLC pack or whatever it is will be the killing of the last major dragon of the area, whether it be like a bigger than the other dragons or whatever. It doesn't really matter. But I think that's pretty much what we're looking for. So three major dragons that we won't be killing in this game, that kind of points to three major expansions coming in the future. Of course, that's kind of concerning because we're looking at, hey, if they're 1.5 years between each, we're looking at five more years of Guild Wars.
Because those dragons exist on the world map we see.
Yeah, that's true. And that all comes back to the
greater world. This might even be something that could be smaller DLC packs.
Well, is that something that kind of worries anybody else, is kind of the idea of we already know how this game ends? Like, it's one thing to know how an expansion ends, kind of leading up to its release, but to know, like, we already know what the end boss of this entire game is going to be.
We're guessing.
We're guessing, yeah.
This could be very
could be killing
the way you guys are talking about this, I assumed...
I
assumed you meant like Arena has come out and said, you know, they've put out the story of this.
They haven't even said these dragons are not going to be fought. They just said the final.
This whole discussion probably should have been prefaced with that.
Oh yeah,
right. Yeah, because I didn't work, cynic. Jesus.
Well, I was kind of saying that if they were to play it really conservatively, then this is what we could expect. Like, this is, again, me as a skeptic saying this is probably what I think is the most likely thing to happen, right?
But from what I've read about Kantha and Elona, which are the two different continents, so much has changed that the main enemy might be completely different.
Could be, yeah.
You could be fighting the Emperor of Kantha.
Like, woke up the dragons.
Halajaka in Elona.
You could be fighting Deathwing.
Yeah, but you could be fighting Deathwing.
And with that...
There's a secret portal to World of Warcraft.
I think we can end up this conversation. I believe we all are pretty unanimous in saying that what we really want from a new expansion is something different, something with diversity, and something with new classes and new gameplay styles, right? That we can just sum it up in
I want more of the same from original Guild Wars. And they keep that formula, magic formula.
I hope maybe they kind of take another cue from WoW with those expansions. They maybe stagger new class and new race. I really would hope that they would not put a new class in with every single expansion.
I hope they do.
I think the traditional like Guild Wars styles put at least one new class in with each expansion. I think that's appropriate.
Yeah, because it's more of a PvP thing. They want to add more opportunities and different styles of playing to PvP. And that's why you kind of need to have a new race by definition in Guild Wars 2 doesn't really add any new options in PvP.
No, yeah.
And that's why we can't really do just a race for an expansion and keep the PvP guys happy. Which, as I said, as Mage Knight rightly pointed out, haven't done in the past. They usually release quite a few new classes over the course of the game.
I don't know if they can even do new races. I mean, there's those polar bear dudes. Those guys are pretty cool.
There's the bird guys. They better put
them. Oh, the bird guys are cool too. Yeah. Oh, never mind. Yeah. I'll take it back. There's plenty of options.
But no, the reason I bring that up is because like what worries me about that is with kind of the openness and the way that the classes are handled, the way the abilities and stuff are handled, like they seem to already kind of. They're going to already have the work cut out for them in balancing them around each other.
Oh, yeah.
And every time you introduce a new class into a system like that, it becomes exponentially harder to keep that balance.
But let's put it this way.
So it worries me if they include too many classes, they're going to have a really hard time. Like, they're not even going to have the last class balanced well enough yet, and then they'll already be introducing another one.
Well, as much as criticism I have for John Peters, let's put it this way. In the original, I'm not sure, I should pretty preface that, but I'm not certain if he was the guy in the original Guild Wars, though I'm pretty sure he is. Guild Wars 1 released, as we said earlier, a new expansion every about 6 to 8 months. And with each new expansion, they had two new classes. And in the end, aside from some like small like fall like drop-offs here and there, I felt that in competitive PvP, it stayed pretty good like as far as the games go.
There was no class that you didn't want to play.
Exactly.
As long as you excluded warrior monks, right?
The most OP class of all. But no, there was. It was definitely a case where they kept that balance. They're really good at balancing PvP. Like that's. If anything, that is one of ArenaNet's major strengths. Beyond their art style, their PvP has always been really fantastically balanced. Their ideas, at least, to keep it balanced have been solid. Whether they've actually executed that every time, obviously they couldn't have, but I actually don't feel that it'll be a major problem for PvP coming from a Guild Wars 1 player, and I believe that they maintained that in Guild Wars 2. But with that, I'm pretty sure we can leave off the conversation there. We will talk more about expansions when it becomes relevant, let's say after the release happens, but yeah, I'm definitely excited for that. To round out the whole discussion, there's plenty of ways for ArenaNet to take my money that I want to take to give them money.
Take my money, ArenaNet.
Please just take all my money, ArenaNet. Here's my
bank number.
Here's my bank account. Just take everything.
Oh, and there's also plenty of ways that they could do it that I wouldn't be very happy with, which we've touched on. I think the one thing we've missed out was the Mystic Keys, but I'm pretty sure we can all know how that conversation is going to go. So with that, I want to end out the show. We'll go around the table with plugs. Durin, do you have anything to plug?
I would like to plug my Twitch channel, but...
But what?
I recently had an issue with my power supply, and now I'm kind of running on a Git power supply, so I'm a little afraid to do much streaming. So we're going to go ahead and hold off on that plug until I know things are a little more stable.
Right. Mage Knight, do you have anything to plug?
Come to the Giant Bomb PC Gaming Hub.
Oh, hell yeah.
The Giant Bomb PC section of the forums.
The Mumble, yeah.
Well, Mumble, I mean, you can find both in the PC section of the forums.
Sure. I guess there's two Mumbles a bunch of cool guys. On Giant Bomb.
All right, continue. Next person to plug.
Check out giantbomb.com forums for the PC forums. You'll find the information for both there. You'll find us on the new one. But either way, definitely check out the Giant Bomb PC community. They're actually pretty active, pretty great guys.
They're great. I love those guys.
Absolutely.
I love most of those guys.
Zumi Rama, do you have anything to plug?
My Star Wars Galaxies Guild is looking for... new members.
My SWTOR guild is looking for new members too.
You're not going to have much luck with that, Mage Knight.
Come join Custer Run on Corellian Run on Old Republic, please.
I think I'd rather join that Galaxy's guild. It's
probably a better game.
I think I'd rather join Noob's.
I'm just hanging out. I'm just hanging out in the galaxy by myself, so I kind of want some friendly faces. We'll build some houses and we'll have a bit of fun. We'll have a cheeky drink. I'll see you there.
Where can they find you if this exists? Or does it not exist? Are you just lying?
It doesn't exist.
Take a left at the sand in Tatooine. And I'll be right there.
Oh, that's sand. I remember that. Okay.
Yeah, oh, that's sand. Oh. Sand.
Yeah, that's the one just past the
Matrix Online. Because there's only one place with sand
Matrix
in
Online,
right?
Yes. There's that one dune.
That stretches out the entire planet. Yeah.
Vajnite, can they find your guild on the Giant Bomb forums as well?
Yeah, I mean, you can find us in the Giant Bomb Old Republic forums, but don't bother.
New Varama, do you have any plug?
Oh, I would have plugged my cooking show, but they took it off the air.
After you killed that person, also, it went pretty downhill.
Yeah, we'll be definitely looking into Guild Wars 1 live streaming on the lead up to Guild Wars 2. I won't be too big a part of it because I this is pretty much all I can be bothered with every week. But Nubarama, Shinboy 630, I believe, is interested, Tarkin, if not necessarily confirmed. Tarkin is definitely interested. So watch for that. We'll probably be streaming it. I'll give you more information when there's more solid details. Aside from
2-hour marathon stream. Do it.
No, I'm actually by Guild Wars, I'll be up for a 72-hour stream.
No sleep till Guild Wars 2.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
What, from today?
God.
No, it's 72 hours, 3 days before.
So, and finally, I'm Self-Confessed Cynic. This is The Linking Cast. You can check us out at the Linking Cast on Twitter and thelinkingcast@gmail.com. You want to email me anything? Some guy just recently emailed me to get into our guild. You're absolutely welcome. I think there's some guys out there who are actually taking written submissions to enter their
guilds. God.
What the hell? No, that's like the wrong way to do it. We are doing it. Everyone's open. Everyone's free. Join us on the Giant Bomb forums, the Linking
forums. We won't take written submissions, but we'll take bribes. I know that.
Yeah. But
basically, just don't be a dick.
Just don't be a dick. Yeah, if you'd like to have fun, join us. Like we
get to be a dick, but you don't.
Initiation is you have to get drunk and buy at least 3 million boxes of fun. And then
take a picture of you with 3 million boxes of fun.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So everyone out there is absolutely welcome. We do everything by the rule of fun.
Except
so like having
you.
Fun, find that someone else who likes having fun with the same thing and play with them. We are pretty serious about PvP. So if you're interested in that, you can join. Definitely myself.
PvP is a joke, so Darth no one cares.
Durin, other guys in the forums who are definitely into it, but we don't have any limitations. We have a bunch of Wolves as well, guys. I like Nubarama, for example, the greatest cook interior.
Should we get do we have a worldwide web zone?
No, that's all. Let's point everyone towards the forums. That's the best place to find us. That's the way we're.
But where will we accept our paychecks and donations? We need the unified address.
One last little plug or idea here. Just for the hell of it, we'll let's try this for this week. If you have any questions that you want answered from us, email them to linkincast@gmail.com and we'll try to get to some of those, assuming we actually get some.
Absolutely.
Next podcast.
Course, yeah, and we definitely have other avenues to do that, so you can post in the thread I post every week and on Giant Bomb Forums as well, and Guild Wars 2 Guru, as well as, if Durin's making it this week, the post to Reddit. I'll also like to thank everyone from Reddit who joined us from last week. There was a really positive response there, so I absolutely thank you guys, and the Guild Wars 2 guys for putting us on the front page. That's fantastic news. So thanks for all of that. Thanks for listening. This is the Linking Cast.
Me on Facebook. Bye.
Add me on Facebook. I want your money.
Bye.
Bye.
Add me on MySpace. Bye.
Noob, you only have to read out the blue. In Guild Wars 2, this week, John Peters discusses with Guild Wars 2 Hub that he'll be working on for the lead up to release. This includes a reaffirmation of pet and summon AI relaxes.
I'm so confused.
Of Gliss,
to what you're trying to the voice like, at first, I thought you were redneck, and then I thought you were computer. Yeah, I thought you were redneck.
He was
computer,
doing a good computer for a second there. I'm not sure what Skype.
He was doing a really good computer.
You're doing a really good computer, but then it turned British, so it became British redneck computer.
Well, hang on there. I didn't hear any British in that.
See, I told you. Once a British person comes on here, it falls apart.
Oh shit, Zumi, can you do a BBC announcer voice?
No.
Try.
Well, what? In what way?
Give him a pre-roll.
John Peters discusses with Guild Wars 2 UB what he'll be working on for the lead-up release.
Isn't that good?
Confirmation of fucking nail it? Summon AI fixes. That's
really good.
A final
actually.
Sweep of class balances with some major fixes coming to Engineer.
And tools
being done to eliminate.
We started doing it 2 weeks ago, and ever since then I'm like, not you have to do that voice.
It's one amazing. Can make a release.
A friend of mine listens to NPR all the time, and we listen to it late at night. And the people on later are always British, and they always sound exactly like that.
Yeah,
there's one enunciation for British people on radio and TV, and it's that.
He just steals it. I don't know how.
Guild Wars 2 release.
But I want Zumi to give it a shot, because he's actually British.
Yeah, Zumi, you're British. You could see the flaws in that, right? It was completely not British.
Yeah,
it didn't sound British. Like, I can see why people would think... I tell you what, you did really well. You did some, like, they enunciate some words, like, at the end.
Yep. Yeah,
and it's sort of like, yeah, you did that really well.
Yeah, he had this,
like, for somebody with no proper training,
BBC without the accuracy of the BBC.
Guild Wars 2. He's a sweet John Peters discusses with Guild Wars 2. Hope what he'll be working on.
That's just you reading.
Do that, but like slow it down.
In Guild Wars 2 released this week, John Peters discusses with Guild Wars 2 UB what he'll be working on for lead up to release. With the reaffirmation of that and summon AI fixes.
Oh god. Oh wait, I am recording all this.
Guild Wars 2 news this week?
This is going to the end of the show.
Guild Wars 2 UB?
In Guild Wars 2 news this week, John Peters discusses with Guild Wars 2 UB on what he'll be working on for really. I can't figure out the voice. I need to nail it down.
Guild Wars 2 news this week, John Peters discusses with Guild Wars 2 UB on
Guild Wars
2. Are there Southern news announcers? Is that a thing? Like, female?
Sure. Guild Wars 2 news this week, John Peters discusses with Guild Wars 2 UB what he'll be working on up the lead of release. Things included a reaffirmation of pet and summon AI fixes. Yeah.
Can you do CNN? Can you try to do CNN?
I don't really watch CNN because it's liberal media bullshit. And
CNN is liberal media bullshit?
It's run by the communists.
Like, a step up from Fox News, really.
God damn it. Hate you.